Morning, everybody. Matt Pavala with you here on 720 WGN. Is this actually Bryan Adams, or is this a weird remix?
No, this is him.
It's really, it's slower than the original one. Is
really?
This the live version or something? Or is he just getting old?
No.
That does not sound like the original Bryan Adams version of that song.
He also did a version with Taylor Swift. I could have picked that
one. Did he? Seriously?
Yeah.
I did not know. Did they change it to 89 because that was the year she was born?
Oh, that is a good question.
Wow.
I don't think so.
Matt Pavala here with you for the first time in, I don't know, guys, I was off for three straight weeks. Thanks for having me back, Roger Badish. How are you?
I'm sorry, who are you?
Oh, that's real nice. That's real nice.
You fell, is Matt you supposed fell, to be in tonight?
You fell in love with Elton Jim and now you won't come back.
Well, huh? I forgot what Matt Pavala sounds like. It's been so long. Hey, Jess, is Matt in the building?
Matt, I missed you.
Thank you, Jess. I appreciate that.
I missed you, too. I want to know how the boys did.
Well, I'm back. So not as well as we were.
Fudge.
But I was gone for 3 weeks because 3 weeks ago we were playing in the sectional tournament in Rock Falls, Illinois. You know where Rock Falls is?
Rock Falls, anywhere near Rockford?
No. It is out by Sterling, Illinois. So basically, you go out to Route 39, take that out to 88, and then head west for another half an hour, and you're in Rock Falls, Illinois. So that's about an hour and a half from West Dundee, where we were.
That's not bad.
So we made it. So we won our district tournament, which we had every year. That was, that wasn't a concern so much. We won district like we had the previous couple years. Headed out to sectionals, where we won three games in a row. Beat Moline twice. Moline has a really good 12-year-old baseball team, but we beat them twice, won our other game, moved on to the state tournament, which we won last year as 11-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as 12-year-olds, if you win the Little League state tournament, you get to go to regionals.
Nice.
And we had one other this is our 65th anniversary year of Tri-Cities Little League.
Wow.
We'd had one other team win the 12-year-old state championship. That was my older son Jack's team. When they were 12. However, they didn't win it until like February.
Huh? February?
Yeah.
It's freezing cold in February.
It's true. They didn't play a baseball game to win it. They were awarded it after it was stripped away from Jackie Robinson West.
Wow, that was that?
That was my older son's
team. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so that was our first team that should have gone to regionals but never got the opportunity.
Right.
And so this team goes to the state tournament, which was up at, used to be called Thillen Stadium. It's like
It's Devon, a stone throws from me.
Devon and Kedzie.
Yeah, right.
That's where we
played. Out the river.
That's
or the canal, yeah.
That's where we played all of our state tournament games.
Why didn't you call me? I would have come up.
I didn't know.
I'm like, I
didn't know.
I could walk over there.
I did not know.
All right.
I did not know. So we won our first game 4-1. We won, now Little League plays 6-inning games. We won our second game 1-0 in the 7th inning.
Oof.
And we won the state championship 4-2.
Yeah.
To become the first team in Tri-Cities Little League history to get to go to Indianapolis to play in the regional tournament. So the regional tournament, they have two down in Indianapolis. They have the Great Lakes one, which Illinois is in, and the Midwest tournament. In Great Lakes, it's Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, Wisconsin, and Indiana.
Kentucky, they're nowhere near the Great Lakes.
That's the one anomaly in that big.
Yeah, really.
The only state that does not touch a Great Lake would be Kentucky, but it touches a state that touches a Great Lake.
Oh, okay, I see. There are a Great Lake wannabe.
They got to make it out. They got to make these, make sense somehow.
Yeah.
And so our first game was against Michigan last Saturday, and these games were not on. Now, if you turn on ESPN any day this week, you're going to see Little League baseball all day long.
Mm-hmm.
We were on, ESPN has this new app called ESPN Plus.
Okay.
And the early games were on the app. So there were five ESPN cameras there. They had the scissor lifts. We got interviewed before the games.
Wow.
A real broadcast, just wasn't on the cable channel. It was on their app.
Okay.
And so we played Michigan the first game, and Michigan's a good team. They pounded us in the first inning. They scored 4 in the first.
Oof.
We ended up losing 7-2. The rest of the way, we played it pretty tight. We lost 7-2, had a day off, And then we played Ohio on Tuesday morning.
Was this a double elimination?
Double elimination. Okay. Until the championship game.
I got you.
And then it's just single elimination.
Right.
And our second game, we lost 4-0.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
It's tough. And so we've been watching the rest, and I really do believe, I know our record didn't indicate it, but I absolutely do believe we were the second best team in that, in the Great Lakes region. We had a tough draw by having Michigan first. Our bats just did not come alive. We have a pretty good hitting team. Hit a ton of home runs. They hit like 24 home runs heading into the regional tournament. And then we had 5 hits in 2 games. In the
ooh,
regional
ouch.
The wheels came off. So we didn't get it done, and we're watching games today, and Ohio lost today to Indiana. They got killed by Indiana, so it's going to be Indiana-Michigan in the championship, which is going to be on tonight. I think like 2 or 4 or 5 this afternoon on ESPN will be the Great Lakes championship. It'll be Michigan versus Indiana. Michigan, so we lost to Michigan 7-2.
Right.
The other two games they played, they beat the teams by greater scores than that.
So you played them the toughest.
We have so far. Yeah. We'll see what happens with Indiana tomorrow. I think Michigan will rout Indiana.
So now
they'll go on to the. So if you win the regional,
right,
you stay overnight in the hotel one more night. You get on a bus the next morning and go straight to Williamsport.
Wow, yeah. So close.
Ugh.
So close.
Well, not that close. But,
well, but still.
But we got there. And that was, it's really amazing. The team and the coaches stay in a hotel. Parents got to go somewhere else. All 12 teams, because there were 2 regionals, are in the same hotel.
Wow.
There's breakfast every morning for the boys. There's lunch at the fields. The fields are immaculate. They take amazing care of them. We had, before our Tuesday morning game, there was a huge rainstorm. And so the game was delayed by about an hour. As they're getting ready to play the game, they literally had like, not a blowtorch, but like a propane tank like you would put on your grill, hooked in. I want to say somebody told me it was a roofing contraption for heating up a roof or maybe the tar on a roof or something. They were basically burning the dirt dry. They were burning the water out of the dirt on the infield. That's how serious they were about having, I mean, it was an immaculate playing surface. It was really impressive how they took care of things. And you know, ESPN guys doing the show.
Must have had a blast.
Really cool for the
Seriously.
Kids. Yes. And now those games will live forever on YouTube and things like that. And we just rewatched one of the games tonight a little bit so Michael could see himself playing and stuff. Mm-hmm. It was cool. It was neat. It's sad. And then that's it, Raj. That's my baseball coaching career.
No, you're not done yet.
Has now come to a
close. No, it's not. No, they're going to call you back. They're going to call you out of retirement.
Well, they can call. And I'm picking up that phone. Yeah.
But you know you had a blast.
I did. And I got to spend all this quality time with my boys. Yeah. And it's very bittersweet because I loved the kids. I loved, all the time with them.
Mm-hmm.
The parents are another story. But,
we won't get into that.
Yeah. But being with the kids all that time was wonderful, and it's a great group of boys, and I look forward to seeing them all play high school baseball in a couple of years and things like that. But, it's weird because that's like now a chapter of my book that's closed, of my life.
That's right.
You know, now I'm not coaching baseball. You know, I'll still coach the boys' volleyball team at school and stuff.
Right.
That's more for fun. But, like, this was literally the last 10 years I've spent as part of this Little League coaching these teams.
So now the kids are going to be too old to be in the Little League,
correct?
Right?
There's still older divisions of Little League you could have, but...
not that they go on to the World Series, the Little League World Series.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, there is an intermediate World Series, but our league...
Not the one we're used to, though.
Not the one we see on TV. Plastered all over ESPN. There is some television coverage of that, but it's not... This was the year that, these kids are playing on ESPN all the time and all that stuff.
Do they want to play some more? Do they want to keep playing baseball?
Tommy didn't play All-Stars this year. He decided, he barely played. He didn't get much playing time. So Tommy's theory was, I could be on a bench like 2 rows back, eating food, not going to all the practices and having fun at these games instead of being on that bench where I bat once a game, barely ever play, and, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And Michael had a good run, but Michael said afterwards he's not playing baseball next year. He's going to hang it up.
Okay.
So we'll see if he comes back after a year, but he wants to run track. He wants to play golf. They want to do other things. So they've put in their time. I'm going to give them time off, and hopefully they'll come back to it. But if they don't, you know, they had a lot of fun, had a lot of memories, and it was a good time.
So. Good. Excellent. Well, it's good to have you back, young
man. Well, it's good to be back. I know. I can't believe I missed 3 straight weeks. Which I did not intend to do by any means, but then we kept having these late Friday night games or really early Saturday morning games.
Mm-hmm.
And then last week we were heading down to Indianapolis at 8 in the morning.
Mm.
I was going to have a bunch of kids in the car, so I thought, well, I can't be going on, you know, half an hour of sleep and doing that. So very happy to be back with you all until 6 a.m., and I don't plan on taking vacation again for a little while. And I, you know, somebody's yelling at me by text 412, says, yay, Matt is back. Stop taking so many vacations. Who you think you are, John Williams? And no, I do not. I apologize. It wasn't technically vacation. It was baseball work.
Yeah. It was busy.
Matt?
We were. Yes, Jess. Hi.
What are you going to do with all your free time now?
So I have a full-time job during the week that's been, you know, not ignored, but I haven't put enough time into in the last 10 years. And now we have a child headed off to college in a year and 3 more in 6 years. So I got to figure out a way to pay for all that. So I think I'll be spending more time working. Is what I'll be doing, Jess.
There you go.
Okay. Well, at least you'll be here.
That's the plan. And I plan to be here every Friday night.
Yeah. More Matt all the time.
Yay.
I don't think they're putting that on a billboard, but no. Sure.
Roger and I will.
We can try.
Yes. We'll.
We'll get up there and put it up.
All right. Here's what we have coming up on the show. At 1:30, Mitch Eppner, who was with us, it had to be a month or two ago now at least, right, Jess? He'll be with us to talk about, so we had that deadline for getting all those families back together. That has not been met. We'll get the latest on that. After 4 a.m., speaking of airplanes, the latest on the Malaysian airplane, Larry Vance will join us to talk about the disappearance of that plane. That was over 4 years ago. We're going to pull some audio from a couple of things. Speaking of John Williams, I was listening to his show, I think it was yesterday or a couple days ago, I texted Jess. I was listening on the way home, and John and Steve and Griffin was filling in for Elif this week. They were talking about a story. I don't know if you heard this, Roger. We're just going to play back a piece of John's show.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about this family, this couple passed away. I don't know if they both passed away at the same time or just the last living spouse passed away. Couldn't find the children for the will. They find a nephew who comes in, cleans out the house, and like, you know, puts it up for sale, and ends up selling everything to a collector, or you know, one of those places that comes in and says, okay, we'll give you $2,000 for everything, and then we're just right. going to sell it all.
Yeah.
And so they do that, and the guy, and it's in California, kind of an artsy town. The guy takes all the stuff, and he puts up this painting they had, and then lo and behold, it's an actual painting.
Yeah.
The story gets crazy from there. We'll tell you later about that. So, and just as working on, we're going to pull some audio from what happened at SeaTac. So, is that what the airport is called?
SeaTac. It's Seattle Tacoma.
Okay.
Yeah.
SeaTac. And is that their O'Hare?
Yeah.
Out there?
Yeah.
See, it's funny. When you hear SeaTac, I think of military. That sounds to me like some sort of base of operations.
Right.
Over at SeaTac.
Like a tactical.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tactical unit.
A Sea tactical, you know.
Yeah.
Like a Navy thing. Yeah. So that's their. So a guy just says, all right, I'm going to take this plane for a little ride.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends tragically. Hopefully only he passed away. I don't know that there was anybody else on the plane.
They're reporting there was no one else on the plane. Yeah. And that there are some homes on the island where the plane crashed. But we have no reports of any injuries there right now. They're officials. They had to take a ferry out to the island. And they're trying to battle the blaze
which
out there.
Which
right
is
now.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And on Twitter was alive as I was coming in
mm-hmm.
with this. I'm scrolling through Twitter, and people are posting the audio from the conversation between the pilot and the mm-hmm. control tower.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there were people who were posting videos, people
right.
that lived out there,
mm-hmm.
that are writing, hey, there's a plane flying around, and there's jets scrambled, and they've got video of it as they're out in their front yards. Like, hey, look at what's going on out here.
Yeah.
So thank goodness it wasn't a terrorist attack, but you can imagine the FAA is going to say, okay, what do we need to do about this? Because if this guy was just a mechanic for an airline, there's got to be, and I imagine it's a concern that TSA and the FAA have had over the years of, you know, somebody from the inside doing something. Of course, 9/11 was just people on a plane who hijacked a plane. We tighten up security like crazy to fight that off.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never read or heard much about it. How did they, and you imagine they did increase background checks, things like that, for people that work at airports to try to make sure that nothing could happen
from
the inside.
Yeah, but you never know. I mean, according to the Pierce County Police, they know who this guy was, And they knew that he had kind of, you know, decided that was the rest, the end of his life.
They know that from his conversations with the air traffic controller. Did they know before today?
That hasn't gotten into detail. But their characterization that he was suicidal and that it came from the police department came pretty quick. And so I'm not sure if they had listened to the conversations before making their decision to term it that, or if they had known this guy and that he had had mental problems. So we're not sure. One other story, though, that you, and I know you love all things that are outer space.
I do.
You know that the solar probe has taken off this morning.
I do. In fact, I had texted Jess to say, hey, can we talk to our guy about that?
Mm-hmm.
And he's unavailable tonight, but he's going to come on with us next week, I
think. All right.
So this is the fastest human thing we've ever made, something like that? That was part
of it. Well, it's using solar winds or something to kind of to get it there, I guess. It's let's see here. Reaching speeds of 150,000 miles per hour. I'd say that's pretty fast.
It sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah. With sailing within 4 million miles of the visible surface of the sun.
So they must have taken some extreme precautions on the heating. I mean, for this to survive, I imagine it's eventually just burning up.
I would imagine, yeah.
But
sure.
It's going to get closer than anything's ever gotten.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can only imagine what they must have, how they must have built this thing.
Well, let me correct
that.
So it
can handle the radiation.
Yeah,
right?
Let me correct that. Earlier missions have reached 150,000 miles an hour. This one will be within 4 million miles and will triple that speed.
Triple? So 450,000 miles an hour?
Yep.
450,000 miles.
Don't blink.
Think about that.
Yeah. What travels at 450,000 miles an hour?
Well, what is the speed of light is 8 miles a minute, right? Wait, that can't be right, Roger.
No. I'm looking at the from Space Inc.
Isn't the speed of light 8 miles a minute?
No, hold on a second.
Or is it way more than that? Am I crazy? Or does it only take 8 minutes for the light of the sun to get to Earth?
That might be. Why does that?
All right, I'll tell you what. We got to take a break.
Speed of light.
Yes.
Is, now.
It's going to be some unit that you and I don't understand, right?
Yeah, it's MS, and I'm like, what? All right, 186,000 miles per second.
Per second.
Mm-hmm.
And this is... This probe got up to 450,000 miles per hour. And that's, what is it? Speed of light?
186,000 miles per second.
Well, that's fast. Okay, we got to take a break. We got to do the news. We're going to talk immigration. We're going to talk about SeaTac after the 2 a.m. news. We got lots to do. Stay with us. Matt Bubala back on the airwaves with you all night tonight. 312-981-7200 is the number. News is next on 720 WGN. 1:32 in the morning. It's a morning market. Let's check the news. Here's Roger Bannock. Morning, everybody. It's Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN, 1:37 a.m. Happy Saturday morning to you. Thanks for staying up late with us. Thanks for welcoming me back to the airwaves. I've been off for a few weeks. Joining us on the phone right now is our friend Mitch Eppner, who joined us a couple of months ago, former U.S. attorney, to talk about the deportations, the rounding up of families at the border and the separation of them. Good morning, Mitch. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning. How are you, Matt?
I'm good. Thank you so much for joining us again. We appreciate it. Last time we talked was, I want to say, it was in the midst of all this craziness going on where the U.S., the Trump administration decided to do a severe crackdown, I guess a zero tolerance policy about people entering the border illegally, and to drive that point home a little harder and deter families from heading to the border. They started separating families completely. While there was a lot of talk at the time about this is just enforcing laws or this has been done before. We'd never had the uproar over this policy. So there was a lot of talk about this was an Obama-era rule. President Trump said, hey, it's a Democrat law. What was the real story behind that? I think there was some truth on both sides. It was how people wanted to parse the words. What was the real story of what was going on there?
So the real story, Matt, was that the Trump administration decided that what they were going to do was criminally arrest everybody who crossed the border, not at a port of entry. Even people who applied for asylum when they were caught by INS. And that was a completely new policy. The old policy that the Trump administration said they were enforcing was, well, once you arrested somebody criminally, you had to separate the people who had been charged criminally, the parents, from their children who would not be charged criminally. And that was the basis on which they said, well, we're just applying an old Obama policy. Arresting everybody was completely unprecedented. The last time I was on the air, I told you it couldn't last because it would take all the resources of the U.S. Attorney's offices right. in order to try that many cases. And within about 4 days after we last spoke, first the U.S. Attorney's office in the San Diego area and then others said that they could not keep doing it because it was taking all of their resources. 2 days after that, the Trump administration ended the policy of arresting everybody, and they went back to the old policy. But in the meanwhile, there were 2,500 children who had been separated from their families, and that's what has been fought in the courts ever since, because the Trump administration had no plan to ever get these children back together with their families. They did less to protect these children than your average dry cleaner does in order to make certain you get your clothes back when you drop them off.
So was that just a lack of preparation on the part of I mean, I don't know if the full story's out yet about how they decided to suddenly start doing this. We know that President Trump has been big on illegal immigration and wants a severe crackdown on that. He wants to build a border wall. He has expended a lot of energy on that issue. So we can argue about that issue all we want. Here's the story. This guy's the president. This was his plan was to do everything he could to stop illegal immigration at the border. And we can argue about whether that's the most important issue out there or not. But so it's not that surprising that he took a very severe tactic to do it. When he was saying that he couldn't do anything about it, the Democrats have to do something, that wasn't truthful though, right? Because like you said, while this, you know, if you arrest somebody criminally, this is how it's done. Previous presidents have never arrested every single person criminally who crossed the border. That's the only change that happened here, right? Is they said, okay, everybody that crosses the border, we arrest them and charge them criminally, whether they're seeking asylum or not. That was just the switch that was flipped on, and that's what caused all this chaos, right?
You've got that exactly right, Matt. And to answer your previous question, it is now clear, based on testimony that was given by members, career civil service, who were from the Department of Health and Human Services before Congress, that the Trump administration, the political appointees, all the way up to the Secretary of Health and Human Services and Department of Homeland Security were warned that if they did this zero tolerance policy, they did not have the plans in place to ever reunite these families, and B, if they did that, they would inflict severe and permanent harm on these children who were being separated from their families. So this is not a bug of the system that Donald Trump put in place. This is a feature. The idea was to permanently harm these children in order to send the word to Central America, do not come, do not cross the border. If you do, your families will be ripped apart, you will be deprived of your children, and this is what they were doing in order to try to stop the flow of refugees.
So So there was talk about this then. You're saying that they warned them, hey, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. Did we publicly know they were about to do this? As I recall, just suddenly this was a huge news story that they were doing this. So was there warning? Did Democratic lawmakers know this was coming? Did Republican lawmakers know this was coming?
So the answer to that is they should have known. Because, for example, General Kelly, when he was not yet chief of staff, but was the head of Homeland Security, went on the Sunday morning public affairs shows and said this was under consideration. And then there
that's
was
right,
not
that's
a...
Right, that's right.
There was not a public announcement that it went from being under consideration to being implemented, but people just took it as being, oh, they're just talking about it. Everybody should have understood that when they were talking about it, that meant that at some point it was actually going to happen.
Well, I could see where people would say they're just saying this because they want the border wall funded. And my I guess my other question would be, and I don't know if we have an answer to this, when they decided to do this, was this will stop the flow because families are going to be so upset by this that they won't? Or was it the pressure is going to be so great on us to stop doing this that I'll demand that they fund the wall if they don't want this to be the way that we handle this? Do we know what exactly was the pushing point for them to decide to pull to go ahead and do that?
The testimony that we've seen before Congress is that the answer is both. It was both that it would be a pressure point to get the wall funded, and that it would so that was preventing people from crossing. But it was well understood that even if you tried to build the wall immediately, it's a multi-year process, and that the immediate thing that would stop the inflow would be terrorizing people in El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, and Honduras, telling them, if you come, you will have your children taken away from you, and you will never see them again.
And while we don't want to hear, so it's an awful, terrible, malicious tactic. But the question is, how has that played out? Did it, in essence, work the way the administration would want to have people trying to cross the border slow down? Or now that they've stopped the policy, has it gone right back to whatever it was at?
That's a really good question that we don't have sufficient data on yet, and we really never will, because the policy has now been reversed. It's now exactly what it was before Donald Trump and his administration changed tactics about 4 months ago.
When, you know, we know that President Trump is somebody who doesn't like taking a lot of advice, doesn't like insanely long research papers on topics. He wants bullet points. He wants to go with his gut, make a decision. Do we know, is that kind of what happened here? You know, if John Kelly was talking about it, so it was being thought about, not just by President Trump, but it was internally discussed and talked about. So is it a matter of, well, we didn't quite think through how this would tie up the court system, how we would handle this influx of people, the housing? You know, was it something like, well, we just tried to do this a little too quick, we need some more time with this? Or is it, we don't care that it's not going to work the right way, it's the idea of doing it for even a short amount of time, the shock and awe of it, I guess, that will get the job done?
I think it's even worse than that. The people who were the architects of this, Stephen Miller, General Kelly, and Attorney General Sessions, they're smart people who actually understood what the effect would be. Stephen Miller was Jeff Sessions' primary advisor on immigration issues when Jeff Sessions was the senator from Alabama. They knew what the results would be. I doubt that Donald Trump understood what the effects would be. As you said, he's not one for long briefings. He heard a plan, he heard it was aggressive, and he said, go ahead and do it, without really understanding what would happen. But the people who were the architects of this understood precisely what would happen, and they didn't expect that this would just be a short-term shock and awe. They thought that this was going to be the permanent policy, and they were prepared to essentially shut down all criminal prosecutions of everything else along the southern border because they wanted to create a crisis.
So you think that the architects, you just said they're smart people, they know immigration. They had to have known how this would tie the courts up. They had to have known that this would overwhelm the courts and would be impossible to keep up with, didn't they?
Yes.
But they didn't care, is what you're saying?
They did not. They did not care.
Hmm. And do you think President Trump stopped this because of the public outcry? Because that does not seem to be, to me, to be why he would stop. I would think if they said, listen, we can't keep housing them all, or there's going to be some crisis in the end, some humanitarian crisis that's going to make us look bad. That, to me, would be more the issue. Or there's going to be serious crimes that aren't going to be prosecuted. That's going to come back to look bad on you. Why do you think he actually stopped the process of doing that?
Well, I think that the public outcry had an effect on Republican members of Congress, and it's pretty clear that on a bipartisan basis, especially on the Senate side, people went back to the administration and said, you have done something so hideously wrong that you are about to lose all operative control over this policy. So either you back off or you're going to lose control. And it was at that point that they backed off.
So it seems that if the administration, and so a lot of people would say that are fervent President Trump supporters or fervent illegal immigration people would say, listen, if you're coming into this country illegally, you should be arrested. These things should happen. I think what got everybody was just the idea of tearing families apart because of the nature of doing that and the long-term effects that that's going to have on children and families. Is there any reason to, I mean, they could have done this. I guess it would take a lot of planning, but the policy now switched to, or what did the policy switch to? I can't remember. If they're arresting people, they're keeping the families together now, or they're not criminally arresting the people? What is now? You said it reverted back to what it was before. So they're just, if they're seeking asylum, the family gets to stay together and they don't arrest them and prosecute them criminally?
That's correct. For people whose only crime is illegal entry without having been previously deported or without having been previously deported for an aggravated felony, the families are now kept together, and there is no criminal arrest. Now, there's a problem for the Trump administration on that because there is a two-decade-old court order, which a previous Republican administration consented to, that said you could not indefinitely hold children in immigration detention while the family's immigration status was being determined. And there's a fight going on right now about whether or not the children can be held with their families in immigration detention. But nobody is being criminally arrested other than the people who would have been criminally arrested before. People had been previously deported, and people had been previously deported after having been convicted of a felony.
How long? So the people that are claiming asylum are staying together, and what happens with them? I want to say that what I read at the time is they're released into the U.S., and then they're kept tabs on while they go through their asylum request. Is that what happens? Do they then gain entry into the U.S. and they're just supposed to check in and as they go through the process of whether they can stay or not?
That is the one big change under the Trump administration. They are being held together in immigration detention.
Okay.
Not in criminal detention, but they are being held together in immigration detention. And that, so there is not immigration bail that is being granted to these families. And there's an ongoing fight about whether or not if it's a family with children, whether or not that can happen, because there's a consent order that the United States agreed to decades ago that said you cannot hold the children in indefinite immigration detention.
Well, you can't hold them in indefinite. How long does it normally take to go through an asylum request? So if people are showing up the border requesting asylum, they're going to hold them in detention. Is there a timeline for we can figure this out within a month or 2 months, or is it generally a year or two or longer before they get through those cases?
It can be. If somebody is not immediately flushed out of the system for having a sort of frivolous claim, it takes months and sometimes years, and under the consent order, the children have to be released within 2 weeks. So there's a complete mismatch between people who have a non-frivolous claim for asylum and the length of time that you can hold a child in immigration detention.
You can understand that, you know, it's a tough situation because you feel bad for families that are fleeing governments or fleeing bad situations. At the same time, we can't encourage people to just illegally enter the U.S. And people that are very anti-immigration, I'm getting texts from somebody right now that says the fault lies with the people illegally entering our country and including their children in the crime. There are, and I saw things at the time, that there are like 8 different places in Mexico where you could go and apply for asylum, that you don't have to illegally enter the country, get caught, and then go through this, that you could apply in other places. Is that true, and is there a reason why that process is not the one to go through? Why take the risk on entering our country illegally and going through this than being somewhere else and applying?
Matt, without meaning to... that's just not accurate. There are places where people can contact consulates, but those consulates are not set up to process this. Going to the DMV when it's closed, sure, it issues licenses, but if there's nobody there to process, it's a absolutely meaningless gesture. The truth is that there... unless you enter the United States either at a port of entry or illegally, you cannot meaningfully get an asylum claim processed. Plus, if you are claiming asylum, you are claiming that the country that you are in is dangerous to your survival. And remember, virtually all of these people are not Mexican. So pointing to consulates in Mexico is kind of it's a mismatch. We're talking mostly about El Salvadorians, Guatemalans, Hondurans, and Nicaraguans. And nobody contends that there are facilities in those countries that would allow for people to meaningfully apply for asylum there.
So you mentioned port of entry. So if the people looking for asylum went to one of our ports of entry and applied for asylum there, would that be different than when they cross the border, get caught, and then ask for asylum?
Well, it's no different with regard to that they would be held in immigration detention. The difference is they would not be breaking any U.S. law, so they wouldn't be subject to criminal prosecution. Since the zero tolerance criminal prosecutions aren't happening anymore, there is effectively no difference between entering at a port of entry or illegally crossing the border and then claiming asylum when you run into a Customs and Border Patrol agent.
Interesting. So we've got to wrap it up here in a second, Mitch, but where do you see this headed? I know we were supposed to be on the phone talking about how there's so many families that still aren't together. And the administration is saying, well, we've reunited every family that was eligible for reunification. But if there was an issue where the parent was arrested or they think there was a threat to the child, that there's 700 some children that have not been reunited, but the government claims or the administration claims there's a reason for that. It's not because we didn't figure it out. It's because there were reasons not to get them together. And there's a lot going on with that. But from what you've seen, you've worked in this for so many years, and you've been on the front lines of all of this. Where do you see this headed? The administration wants to take a hardline stance on this. What do you see happening over the next year as far as, you know, immigrants entering the country illegally or claiming asylum, and how it's going to be handled?
Well, I'm going to say something very provocative. The courts, and I'm happy to keep talking about this for as long as you have time, the courts have started to crack down on the Trump administration, and you had a federal judge just this week threaten to hold Attorney General Jeff Sessions in contempt of court if the United States government did not start complying with court orders. And in that context, contempt of court means imprisoning him. There is the possibility, both in the near term and in the longer term, that people who are enforcing this policy for the Trump administration will end up in jail.
All right. Well, we'll keep following this, Mitch. We'll keep talking with you. I really appreciate your time. It's fascinating policy issue. You knew that something hardline was going to happen. The wall isn't it. And even if the wall gets funded, let's face it, like you mentioned, it's going to take years and years and years and years and years. And even then, people are still going to find ways to enter the country illegally. And whether it's that or claiming asylum, we've got some policy differences from two sides of the aisle on how that should be handled. Mitch Eppner, former U.S. attorney, thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us again.
Thank you.
All right, sir. We'll talk to you soon. Okay, we're running late. We got to take a quick break, and then we'll get to the news next on 720 WGN. Coming up after the news, let's get into this plane that was hijacked from Seattle-Tacoma Airport late Friday night. A mechanic at the airport kind of went on a joyride, and it didn't end well. We'll talk about that next. The Steve Cochran Show. Here's your news at 2:04 a.m. with Roger Badish.
It goes electric, baby, when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home. We're flying up no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. Feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being with us until 5 a.m. when the morning show comes on with Max and Orion. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's the text in line. You may reach us there. So Jess and I during the news, Roger, were listening a little bit to the audio of the gentleman who absconded with a plane from Seattle-Tacoma Airport late Friday evening. And literally kind of went on a joyride.
Yep.
Just like, you know, if you horked somebody's car and you took it out and you wanted to see Lakeshore Drive and go past the Hancock and things like that, he just got up there and started having a conversation with the air traffic controllers. And we've got a bunch of audio was somehow obtained very quickly. And so we've got a bit of that. Jess is just going to roll through some of it. And just listening to it is just amazing, the casualness of this gentleman. Just go ahead and I don't know if there's an order you can feel you can sort of start. And the gentleman on Twitter who we're finding a lot of this from just kept posting stuff as he had it. So I don't know if there's an exact order to it. But just go ahead and hit the first one you've got there.
A little bit. I'm sorry, say that again.
Sorry, my mic came off. I threw up a little bit. Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.
So.
Well, somebody's day was ruined.
Well, maybe not. I mean, listen, this guy went out how he wanted to, so his day wasn't exactly ruined. I know he ended his life, so that's a tragic ending to it. But he seems very calm and relaxed about the entire thing. And he's apologizing to the air traffic controller because he works at the airport. He understands what a mess he just created for people flying because I'm sure they grounded all flights.
Yeah, they shut the airport down for about 45 minutes or so from the best that I could piece it together as it was happening.
Yeah.
I was checking the times of when we were getting the reports of when traffic was stopped, and then when people started posting that their plane was taking off, and it was kind of hard to extrapolate the times, but I'd say about 45 minutes that things were at a standstill at the airport.
Jess, go ahead with your next one.
get it to go. A couple hours, I guess. But, yeah, I wouldn't know how to land it. I wasn't really planning on landing it.
So that's a bad sign. And I'm sure the air traffic controller's like, oh, crap, as soon as he said that.
Yeah.
He knew enough to get it up in the air, but he hadn't worked on the landing thing. Now, you would think if he wanted to, they could try to talk him through a landing, at least from all the movies I've seen.
Well,
maybe that's literally impossible, but from every movie we've ever seen, if you can get it up in the air, we would assume they could talk you into the landing part.
One would assume.
I mean, I have no idea. Maybe that's impossible.
My understanding from the reports that I read was that they did try to talk him down. And well, he wasn't having anything to do with that.
Yeah, right. I know. I'm just saying, I wonder if he said, you know what? I changed my mind. I don't want this to end badly. Let's try to bring it in. How that would have gone.
Yeah.
Just go ahead with your next one.
Just flying the plane around, you seem comfortable with that?
Oh, hell yeah. It's a blast, man. I've played video games before, so I know what I'm doing a little bit.
Okay, and you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
Nah, everything's peachy clean. Just did a little circle around Rainier. It's beautiful. I think I got some gas to go check out the Olympics. And, yeah.
Wow.
He's just so calm about the whole thing.
Peachy keen.
Jess, can you do the one, if you scroll down, Jimmy Thompson, whose Twitter feed has this, writes, here he discusses doing a barrel roll before he tries to land.
I need to be, what do you think, like 5,000 feet at least to be able to pull this barrel roll off? I feel like I need to be, what do you think, like 5,000 feet at least to be able to pull this barrel roll off?
So he says he's going to do a barrel roll.
Yeah. And the video, you've seen the video.
I've seen a little bit of video, and there's video of him doing the barrel roll.
It's, well...
Right?
It looks like it, to me, somebody had the cell phone video watching him doing some wide turns.
Yeah.
Before he disappeared, and then the whoever had the cell phone suddenly moved away from the plane and caught the fighters coming into the area. So we really couldn't see what else the plane was doing.
What do you got next, Jess?
I'm just going to do this barrel roll real quick.
Well, no need to do that. If you could just start a turn to the right, and then I'll tell you when to stop turning, and then you can keep it level from there.
I'm just going to do this barrel roll real quick.
Yeah. So it's like he's talking to him, like, hey, how you doing, buddy? But, hey, I got this plane up here, you know, and, boy, look what I can do. I watch some video games, and I think I'm just going to, I don't know.
Let me see if I can play one.
Yeah, you know.
Hold on, let me try to play one here, Jess.
Damn it, Andrew. People's lives are at stake here.
Now, Rich, don't say stuff like that.
Nah, I just told you, I don't want to hear no one. I just want you to whisper sweet nothings into my ear.
So it sounds like he got a little more emotional.
It sounds like he's
or was he screwing around?
Drunk.
Well, I don't think he was.
Here's
one where I don't know if we'll ever get into his head here, but he does make one comment that's kind of odd.
I think if I land this successfully, Alaska will give me a job as a pilot.
I think they would give you a job doing anything if you could pull this off.
Yeah, right. Nah, I'm a white guy.
So it sounds like he had some sort of unhappiness with, I don't know what.
Yeah,
Nah, I'm a white guy.
So. We'll find out more once we...
Will we? They just closed the Las Vegas shooting investigation. They have no idea why the hell that guy did that.
Right.
And that drives me insane that is being closed, and we don't know what triggered that.
Because there weren't enough people to talk to that knew enough about what was happening to him at the time for them to get a complete picture. here's what we don't have so far. One, his work record with the airline. Was he being laid off? Had he been laid off and he snuck back on? How well trained was he in air mechanics to be able to fly the plane off and do what he did without crashing on takeoff? So we don't know anything about that and his professional abilities as far as the airline's concerned. We don't know any family members. Nobody's talked yet. And so we don't know what he has been going through. Don't know if he's been married. Don't know if he's got kids. We don't know any of that information yet. So again, there's a lot we don't know that will help us understand not only his capabilities, but his mental abilities at that time. And that's going to come out over the next 24 hours. So
here, somebody tries to talk him into landing.
On the ground. All right. Nah, damn it. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't want to. I was kind of hoping that was going to be it, you know?
So the guy's trying to talk him into landing. He's like, I don't know. Maybe. I wasn't really planning on that. And he sounds like he is having fun up there.
Yeah.
Here's him discussing doing...
Well, I don't know if he's having fun or if he's got other plans.
No, to me, I mean, maybe, but... And maybe he's just mentally ill at the time, but it sounds like he's just having fun.
Yeah, he was just...
In a safe kind of manner. I think I'm going to try to do a barrel roll. And if that goes good, I'll just go nose down and call it a night.
Well, Rich, before you do that, let's think about this. I got another pilot coming up, Pilot Joel, here in just a minute or two, I hope. And we'll be able to give you some advice on what to do next.
So he says, you know, I think I'm going to do a barrel roll. That works out. We'll just call it a night.
Yeah, I'm going to point the nose down and call it a night.
Yeah. Said I'll land it in a safe kind of manner, which I guess to mean I'll find an empty area to take this down.
Yeah. There's still a lot that needs to be made public. And like I said, we may get a different picture of this guy.
Yeah.
I just think there's not enough information at this point to make any kind of speculation as to why he did it.
I have no idea why he did it, but just from listening to the audio.
Well, right.
He doesn't sound in distress.
No.
He doesn't say anything about, you know, he... I don't know if he was suicidal or not, but he really... There is a sense of enjoyment from him on some of this. When he talks about the mountains and how beautiful it was. Here, he talks about the sights going by here. Hold on.
Just kind of lightheaded, dizzy. And you know, the sights went by so fast, too. I was thinking, like, I'm going to have this moment of serenity, you know, I'll be able to take off in all the sights. And, there's a lot of pretty stuff, but I think they're prettier in a different context.
So he says, just kind of lightheaded, dizzy. Man, the sights went by so fast. I was thinking, like, I'm going to have this moment of serenity, taking all the sights. There's a lot of pretty stuff, but they're prettier in a different context.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like he knew what he was going to do once he took off.
He was talking a little bit more about video games.
Just flying the plane around. Do you seem comfortable with that?
Oh, hell yeah. It's a blast, man. I played video games before, so... I know what I'm doing a little bit.
Okay.
Right, we played that one already.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. Yeah, video games.
Extremely.
Right. So he flies out over the Olympic Mountains. Listen, I'm talking to the guys about this.
141. Man, have you been to the Olympics? These guys are gorgeous. Holy smokes.
Yeah, I have been out there. It's always a nice drive.
On 119.2. If I like
it. But I think I'll buy up a beer.
Yeah, I bet you do. I haven't done much hiking over there. But if you could start a left turn and turn back towards the east. I know you're getting a good view there, but if you go too much further in that direction, I won't be able to hear you anymore.
All right. Hey, pilot guy, can this thing do a backflip, you think?
So he said, jeez. So you got to love the air traffic. The air traffic controller is great.
Yeah.
He's talking to him just because
Well, he's trying to keep him calm.
Well, he's doing a great job. Yeah. And he's, I haven't done much hiking out there. You know, if you could just take a quick left turn, kind of head east a little bit. If you go much further, we're going to lose audio contact. Just staying. And he's like, all right, okay. Hey, pilot guy, think this thing can do a backflip?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. About 3 days ago, there was a video posted on social media. And you've seen the movies where a fighter pilot will do the loop, you know, he'll
sure
go up and try to bring the plane back around and down. And the video that was on was of a cargo plane. Now, this is a big, heavy plane. Not really known to be able to do that kind of stressful maneuver. And it did a perfect, as he says, backward flip. And that was, I kept watching that. I'm going, I'm waiting for the plane to stall out. I'm waiting for the engines to cut out for the plane to start diving because I didn't think it was light enough to be able to make that maneuver.
Yeah.
And the stress on the plane and the pilot trying to do a maneuver like that is, I mean, I'm not a pilot. I'm not a flyer. I've never been, you know, in a military jet of any kind. But it just seems like it. People aren't doing that every day, you know? It's not something that you would see a big plane like that do. So if he says he wants to do a backflip in that prop jet...
What is he on? Was he on a prop jet? What kind of plane was this? What kind of plane is this?
I don't know what you're getting at. It didn't have jet engines.
It's not a 737.
No. It was a, now I have to, I had all that earlier. Let me find a link on that. By the way, we've got an update on that, the water rescue on the river. Apparently, about 7 people were in a boat that flipped.
Oh, jeez!
On the south branch of the river there at 2800 South Damon. They've got them all out of the water. They've transferred 2 people to the hospital, but they are not in serious condition. The other 5 refused treatment. So and there's no word as to what the heck they were doing out there. I wanted to update you on that.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to look, find out, because that was some time ago, so all my resources are... There we go.
I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break.
Yeah,
we
got to
catch up on spots.
I just clicked on one here.
We'll have more of this and more of that and more of everything else in a minute here, 720 WGN. Thank you, Wendy. A little after 2:30 in the morning, we'll have more on this airline. Stolen plane, a Q400 Bombardier used by Horizon Air, its sister carrier, Alaska Airlines. We'll talk about this after the news. Let's check the headlines now. Roger Badish. It's gonna be all right. We don't even have to try. It's always a good time. It's always a good time. We don't even have to try. It's always a good time. Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you. 720 WGN, 2:38 in the morning. Tom Skilling is celebrating 40 years as Chicago's very own. Take a look back as WGN-TV honors Tom. That's Monday on the WGN-TV News at 9. Have you seen, Raj, the little commercials that they've been playing this week?
Mm-hmm.
40 years!
Yeah.
How is that possible?
I don't know. I can't even remember.
So Tom's
got to
be
ago.
In his 60s then, right? I mean, he didn't start at GN as a teenager.
Yeah, he's my age.
Wow.
Yeah, I think we're just about the same age.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was that old.
And he looks, you know, it's
see
frightening.
What I did see
he
there,
looks
Raj?
Younger than me.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't have thought I don't know what I would have thought he was in.
Hey, Matt.
Yes.
Is that going to be you one day?
Is what going to be me?
You're going to live up to Tom Skilling.
No. Oh,
40 years in radio?
40 years, I don't know, is what. But Tom has been a star here for 40 years. I mean, he started out on... No, Jess. Let's get to next week, Jess. Let's just try that.
I think you're a star.
Oh, gosh.
There you go.
Stop. So getting back to the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Airline employee, this is from the New York Times, took off in a stolen plane at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport on Friday night. 29-year-old. I don't think they've released the name
yet.
No,
they have not identified him yet. Nope.
He crashed into Puget Sound on Catron Island, southwest of the airport.
That's 25 miles southwest of the airport. There's some homes on the island. But there's not a lot.
The plane was a Bombardier Q400. So you don't see many of those flying.
Not in the Chicago area.
No. What did we used to have? What was the plane, Raj, that crashed in Indiana? This has got to be 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, gosh.
It was because of icy conditions. I remember that.
I can't remember. There's been, I'm not going to say so many. But there's been a handful of short distance planes, and I've flown in a couple of them. When I was going to school in Carbondale, we used to fly in and out of the Marion Airport, which down the road a ways. But even though Carbondale had an airport, it normally did mail runs and things like that. But the Marion Airport, you could fly prop planes, and it didn't take a lot of passengers. Do you remember Jerry Lewis movie, The Family Jewels? Have you ever seen that?
No.
All right. Well, one of the relatives is a pilot, and for those who have seen the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. This was a prop airplane where you had to climb up and then climb up to get into the plane and then climb down to get into the body where the seats were. And the seats were covered in fabric with doilies on the headrest and, you know, wooden armrests and like one seat on each side of the aisle. So there would be maybe room for, I don't know, 10 passengers. And these were short hop airlines. They were planes that would get you from a small community to a somewhat larger community with a bigger airport and a bigger airplane.
Right.
And then you'd hop on that and then go to the bigger city and you might get a jet plane, a small jet plane that could take you to New York or Chicago or some one of those bigger cities, and then you could fly around the world. So I've been on those prop planes. This prop plane looks exactly like it, but about three times larger.
Yeah, this is a pretty good-sized prop plane. Set 76, I believe.
Yeah, 76 passengers, two pilots, two flight attendants. It can fly 1,100 nautical miles on the tanks filled. I don't know if that's high octane or not. Alaska Airlines has 45 of these in its fleet. It can cruise at 414 miles per hour, maximum cruising altitude 25,000 feet, and we're pulling that off of the Alaska Airline website.
What's interesting for a guy to be able to take off in this and be able to fly this, I know he kept commenting on watching video game or playing video games, and you know, Spike Odell was famous for flying his simulator back in the day, and he would talk about it.
That's right.
My assumption would be that most of those simulators or video games that you play are on much more modern aircraft than this. I don't know, maybe things are very similar in cockpits, but, you know, if you're flying a simulation, you're not flying, most likely, I would think, a Bombardier Q400. So I'm impressed that he was able to take off and fly the plane as well as he did, because I would think this doesn't look like the self-sufficient modern aircraft that we're used to seeing at O'Hare hearing about from Boeing.
But I don't think that just because it's a prop plane doesn't mean it doesn't have the modern equipment that a jetliner would have.
You're absolutely right. And my assumption, because it's a turboprop, is it's an older plane. And
no,
I guess that's
not
necessarily the case.
No, no. These are newer. A lot of these have recently come online in the airlines to replace the older models.
They're still making turboprops. They're not jets.
There is still a big need for these around the country and actually around the world. I was reading of a sister plane made by an Italian firm, and these are used all over Europe to fly from the short distances.
But when you're at O'Hare,
mm-hmm.
like, so looking at...
There are some prop planes up there for
very rarely,
short
though.
Jumps to
rarely.
Like Wisconsin or Michigan or something like that.
But so I fly to Kansas City. We're looking at a flight to Lincoln to go back to visit University of Nebraska mm-hmm. again. And those are Canada Air, you know, Bombardier jets. And mostly for the short distance planes out of O'Hare, you know, there's very small planes where you feel every crack in the runway.
Yep.
But they're all jets. And I'm surprised that they're making turboprops anymore, even for short haul stuff. I wonder if there's an advantage or if there's a reason to use turboprop planes versus just using jets.
I don't know. Because, again, this is Alaska Airlines. So it's probably mainly being used in the Northwest and through Canada and Alaska. And why they're using prop instead of jet, I don't know.
I wonder if due to the air or due to conditions, there are some advantages to that.
I don't know. What's the elevation up there?
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe prop planes work better. Again, I'm not a pilot. We ought to get Ro on here.
Ro Khan?
Yeah.
Is he a pilot?
I don't know if he's a pilot or if he's just very proficient in avionics. He is. I mean, I've heard a lot of his shows where he has had flight experts on, airline experts, and he can hold his own with them.
Well, maybe we'll hear him talking about this next week. I imagine he'll be playing some of this audio because it really just is amazing.
Yeah,
that the guy's just, you know, I thought I'd have some fun with this and let's do a barrel roll. You think it can do it? And, you know, there's video out. I don't know if you've seen. It's been through social media quite a bit lately of Boeing testing, I think it's its latest 737 plane, and doing like a 180 degree takeoff. Have you seen that?
Oh, where it takes off, it goes straight up?
Like straight up.
Yeah, yeah, I did see that.
And then turns completely to the side one way, completely to the side the mm-hmm. other way, makes these incredible sharp turns.
Yeah.
You know, it's showing its maneuverability, and it's pretty amazing. This plane, I would not expect to be doing barrel rolls and things like that that this guy pulled off.
I don't know. I'm not sure what this plane can do.
Well.
And by the way, we've got 6 minutes till liftoff.
Oh, of our flight to the sun?
Mm-hmm.
And where is that taking off from?
I'm watching the live NASA feed right now. I think it's Cape Canaveral. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Okay. Yeah. Are we going to have a live? Is it going to be broadcast live in 6 minutes? Can we carry that?
Yeah, I'm looking at the
countdown?
NASA. It's been on the NASA site. I'm looking at it right now online.
Okay.
It's a live feed. They've got co-hosts. I've got a couple of scientists
this is
named after a real live scientist.
Who's it named after?
The what the heck's his name now? Park. Well, no, I mean it's
you're all excited. This is named after a real live scientist too.
It is.
I don't know.
I think he's right.
It's a scientist. How would I know his name?
I think it's Parker.
All right, hold on. We got a caller. We'll come back to that in a second. 312-981-7200. Joe is on from Downers Grove. Hey, Joe. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good, Matt. Listen, you refer to this guy as a gentleman, and I think you're probably right. He has a turboprop. You guys have properly identified that. And I think he was trying to act like he was in an A-10 Warthog. You guys know what that is?
No.
That is a turboprop.
Okay.
And it happens to be one plane that the Marines and the Navy have fought to keep in our arsenal, if you will. It's tremendously maneuverable. That's the reason why you want turboprops. They can land in areas that no other jet could even think of conceivably trying to land, okay? So, to my central point, his mention of serenity and beautiful sights, so forth and so on, I think the guy, I would guess, it's all supposition, it's all speculation, I guess he has some military background, my gut feel, okay? He experienced something in life that just, you know, just said, hey, this is enough of this. And he, you know, sat down in an area, crashed in an area where he knew it was, the population was not very dense, if you will. So my viewing of this entire episode is tragic and sensitive and a whole bunch of emotions that it, you know, evoked in me. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, man. I think he is a gentleman. I don't, you know, like people referring to gentlemen, you know, for other episodes where you don't know what the motives are, what the guy's made of, so forth and so on. But I think in this case, you're right. I don't know how you arrived at that, but I think you're right in this episode.
All right, Joe. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, I don't know what I was thinking as I said gentleman. It was just my way of referring to him. I wasn't necessarily making a statement about him being a good guy, but he definitely didn't seem like he wanted to hurt anybody. He didn't have any truly malicious intent. He seemed to have something against the airline when he said, will they give me a job as a pilot? Nah, I'm a white guy. So maybe something happened at work. But there is one emotional moment in this, or truly emotional thing that he said before we got to the end here, and it gives a little insight into him. Let me play this one more piece for you.
I got a lot of people that care about me, and it's going to disappoint them to hear that I did this. I would like to apologize to each and every one of them. Just a broken guy. Got a few screws loose, I guess. Never really knew it until now.
Yeah, he knew what the situation was. He was well aware of what he was going through and why he was doing this.
Just a broken guy. Got a few screws loose, I guess. Never really knew it until now.
Yeah.
Man, that's tough.
Yeah.
That is tough. But he went out, you know, he probably, I don't know, maybe he was thinking about taking his life, and he thought, you know what, I want to see this beautiful, I work on these things all the time, I never get to go up and enjoy them. It is interesting, you know, to think about the view that a pilot has.
Yeah.
It's so different than us just looking out that side window.
And he even talked about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How gorgeous that must be.
Speaking of your Parker solar probe.
Yes,
it
was.
It's the first NASA mission to be named after a living individual, Dr. Eugene Parker, solar physicist, in 1958 first predicted the existence of the solar wind.
Ah.
And so I'm looking again at NASA Live, and right now we're in Mission Control. We're looking inside Mission Control.
How long till liftoff?
They said at 53, and that's coming up in about another minute and 12 seconds here. It's on the dock, steam coming out.
And what do we have? Do we know what kind of rocket we're on here?
It's a three-rocket.
Three-stage rocket?
Three-stage rocket, if you want to call it that. Looks like the three cigars. Let's see here. It's supposed to, like I said, at 53 our time, 3:53 Eastern time. It is going to use Venus to adjust its course and slow down in order to put the spacecraft on the best trajectory. They will fly past Venus seven times throughout the mission. They will get closer and closer to the sun each time. So it's going to orbit several times, not necessarily going to fly directly.
Do we have, so we're 10 seconds away. Do we have audio like that whole 3, 2? Can we get that countdown thing going? This is why Roger and I are not in Michigan.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, Roger, I don't know. It's here somewhere. Somebody hit that button. Yeah, go. That would be you and I.
It's. I'm not getting audio out of here, out of this the computer, unfortunately. It should be going out, and it's not. I should be getting the audio out of this.
Oh, we almost said something. I heard something. That wasn't it.
No. It's still sitting there. The towers haven't moved away, nothing.
815 says, tell Roger props are more cost efficient than jets. So we got
that.
Well,
true.
773 says, on Halloween 1994, an American Eagle ATR-42 crashed in Indiana. It was a two-engine turboprop. I think that's
that the one
I'm
were,
thinking. I think so. I think so. 847 says, the Bombardier Q400 is worth $32 million.
What?
So that's expensive.
Yeah. Wow, this thing, they said it was at 3:53 Eastern Time. And let me see here.
815 says it's the amount of fuel a jet uses in non-flight time that makes the difference. It's not cost-worthy for shorter flights. 312 said prop planes require less runway, short runways.
So okay.
Maybe that makes sense, too.
Well, we're still looking at, and again, if I could hear this, and I should be able to, and I don't know why. But,
all right, you figure that out. We'll take a quick break. Okay. We've got the news coming up in a minute, 720 WGN.
Mission Control, we have a hold at 4 minutes.
Why? What happened?
I don't know. I'm looking at the countdown clock. 4 minutes. They have a hold at 4 minutes. And I fixed the audio.
Rocket at Space Launch Complex 37 on Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. On the bottom of the right of your screen, you see the T-clock, which is stopped at the T-minus 4 minute mark. Mick, can you tell us a little bit about the clocks?
Yeah, the T-clock is used by the team to continue.
A lot of technical stuff, you know. Unless you're an astronaut, you don't need to know all of that.
Well, I don't know. He's talking about how a clock works. You and I can handle that.
Point right well, now, so but the no T-clock.
Hold time remaining. So
it's
we're
a time clock,
actually,
isn't it?
In this
it is a time clock, but it's a takeoff time.
Available launch window this evening.
See?
We had 45 minutes left over in our launch window. We're down to 35 minutes in that launch available window right now as teams continue to work through the issues that they've identified during the last hold before moving into terminal count.
Okay.
You know, it's been a...
Oh, so they got some issues.
Working on some stuff.
They're working on some stuff. Somebody forgot to, you know, take out the gasoline hose.
This would be what happened. They'd be you and I would be there. I'd be like, Roger, Matt... Remember how we told you? Oh shoot!
You know what we do? We
hold on. Give me. Stop it at 4 minutes. Let us hold on.
You know what I would do? I would say, "Hey, did you check the gas cap? Stick the stick down there and see if there's gas. If there's still enough fuel in there."
We'd be like, "Hey guys, boss. Here's the thing. Remember how you told us to put the gas cap on? We did that, but it didn't click
twice."
Roger thinks it clicked once. I think I might have stopped before it clicked. So could we just, if you just stop it at four,
let us run
out there, and you and I, you see the big video of the rocket from far away and these two idiots running across the tarmac, and now we're like climbing that scaffolding halfway up to where the tank is.
Yeah.
And then we're arguing at the bottom. You climb it. No, you climb it. You're the one that didn't click. No, I turned it. You didn't tell me it had to click. No, I told you it had to click. No, you didn't. Yes, you did. You go up. No, you go up.
Guys, get up there and cut that thing.
We would set the space program back 5 million years, seriously.
It'd be like we'd go back to Flintstones times.
Yeah, right.
We're just like all running to get the car started. All right. It's 3:01 in the morning. Let's check the news, and then we'll see if we get back to a countdown with NASA to go see the sun. And that'll be fun.
Yeah.
The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I love this song. I'm
losing. Me too.
Just
me too.
A little.
Oh,
Ed Babala with you, 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. It's 3:07 in the morning. What the hell are you doing up? Oh, well, you're here with us, so we'll take it.
Waiting
maybe you're working, maybe
off.
You're driving, maybe you just can't sleep, maybe you just got home. What a night you had. Or maybe you're watching the NASA channel and tuning us in, wondering what Matt and Roger did to screw up this launch. Roger got all excited, talks, hey, the NASA thing's going to launch, let's listen in. Oh, they're not doing it. We're stuck at T minus 4 minutes.
Yeah. I could just see us standing there going, where does this part go?
This is where Roger and I are just kind of quietly trying to back out of the room. Where are Roger and Matt? I don't know. They were just here a minute ago.
They were holding something that was glowing.
We're like burying our head in papers. And people are talking. What? No, I'm. What? No, that's not my. I wasn't involved in that part. I'm looking at the thing with the ball bearings.
Let me use your calculator.
So while you were doing the news, I was listening to the NASA feed on their Twitter.
Yeah.
And they're saying that the point of the probe is to figure out why the atmosphere around the sun is 1,000 times hotter than the surface of the sun.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I never would have guessed that the atmosphere is 1,000 times hotter than the surface. You would think the surface hotter than the atmosphere.
One would think that.
I'm assuming there must be some sort of gases that get trapped and heats things up even hotter, and it sort of plays off each other or something like that, right?
Yeah, one would think so. And one would also question how this probe can get close enough to the sun to make these measurements without burning up way before they could get the measurements.
Well.
And I would have an answer for that.
Oh.
According to NASA's own site, there's a heat shield made of 4.5-inch thick carbon composite foam material between two carbon fiber face sheets. While the sun-facing side simmers at 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit, behind the shield, the spacecraft will be a cozy 85 degrees Fahrenheit. And it will be able to conduct its tests before it then burns up.
So literally, we could put a human in this thing?
One would probably say that's a possibility, but then in its next thought think, you've got to be crazy.
Well, it's only 85 degrees in here. I mean, here's what we do.
It's about 69 in here.
Which window company does Lou support? Is it Gilkey? I mean, we have a lot of great window companies.
Yeah, we do.
We get one of them to sponsor Lou on this thing, and he'll make a spot talking about, these windows are so great, it's 2,500 degrees outside, it's a balmy 85 inside. Come on.
You would think you're flying around the sun.
Yeah. These windows are so good, I took it to the sun, I was fine.
Oh, or are they talking again?
LD, NLM, that one.
NLM.
Should I pull it up on mine?
Okay, this occurred about a minute after the expected response from the ground.
Oh, you're getting a different feed.
Stream. This is from the vehicle.
I think yours is just a couple seconds behind mine.
Data, we recognize that it was from the vehicle. The streams are good, and we are in a good position to proceed. The risk level is the same as what we had discussed previously and voted to proceed. So the anomaly team is recommending we try again. LC concurs, LD. LD concurs, NLM.
NLM concurs.
I love when they go through all the different people. That gotta, are
well,
you got to yeah,
sign
we're
off
in.
On it.
Are you in? Yeah, we're in. Are you in? I don't know about this.
The guy on board.
Roger, Matt. I don't know. I just don't know. I got a bad... In my gut, I know everything looks good. Yeah. In my gut, I don't like this.
We started tonight with a 65-minute window. We now are down to 23 minutes.
Uh-oh.
Can you tell us a little bit about what we just heard on countdown?
So they got 23 minutes left in their window.
Right.
The vehicle from the no-go situation they had.
Oh, I know why I'm not getting audio.
A little earlier.
Darn stupid thing.
Let me turn that on.
I think I have to refresh.
And this is why we're not launching rockets.
Computers in the control center. And the team looked at that data hit that they had gotten and have determined that they completely understand it. And the data stream has returned to its normal operation. And
all right, so
yeah.
I'm not just going to keep playing that audio
this
entire time.
You know what? Growing up,
not
only with the start of the space program, and I was there when the first rockets went up.
Right.
Friendship 7 and all those spaceships went up. But also there for the moon landing. And I was just enthralled with this stuff. You would have every network out there at a table out like across the bay from where the rockets were taken off. And you would have your news anchors there and your science experts, and you would just be sitting there enraptured with this broadcast, waiting for the clock to finally count down and the rocket to head up. It was, I don't know what it was about that, but you were just riveted in your chair watching this stuff. And I love it. I understand one billionth of what all this is, but good Lord, I want to be involved in it.
It's pretty sweet.
It is.
Teams, can you characterize what the day was? Yes, Josh. What the team was doing is we were talking a little earlier. The team evaluated the ground data stream from the launch vehicle. They've determined they are good to proceed with launch this evening. So NASA's launch manager, Omar Baez, and United Launch Alliance's launch director, Lou Manjuri, have coordinated a new T0 time this morning for 4:28 a.m. That's approximately 16 minutes.
So they're going to move the clock to 2 minutes at 4:28.
It's kind of
at 4:30.
Kind of a
this
cheat,
thing should
but okay.
Take off.
So I'm watching this on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And on their Twitter feed, people comment. You can comment on this live stream.
Yeah, right.
So I'm watching these comments, and it just kills me because people.
Let's
just,
do this.
Some people are being like, let's light this bitch up. And then somebody wrote, good thing they did this at night while the sun's sleeping.
Yeah. Where's Elon when you need him?
Oh, God.
How long to launch? Oh, my goodness.
A lot of I concur.
Yeah.
People, I concur. I'm good. We're good to go.
I'm hungry. What? What if the sun doesn't exist in 7 years when it gets there? What? Is there a Tesla in there? She's like a peacock. You got to let her fly.
Somebody wrote, does the sun have global warming also? That's a good one.
Good question.
We're going to the sun to study the effects of global warming on the sun. Is it getting hotter?
I better see E.T. or something. Ooh, Chicago checking in.
Oh,
there
yeah?
you go. Yeah.
Represent.
Represent.
Melbourne, Australia yeah. just went by. Somebody wrote, it takes a good guy with a rocket to stop a bad guy with a rocket. If everybody had rockets. All right. Well,
this,
so you said that you heard
this.
Them
this
say,
is great radio. Oh, someone just said Roger. What? I don't know.
Roger, Roger.
Roger, Roger.
So it's only 3:15 right now. So you said they said at 3:28. They're
yeah,
going to set 3:28.
They're going to move the clock to 2 minutes and then start the countdown.
And why? Why don't they just start the countdown?
Well, because they've been at 4 minutes for over a half an hour.
I know, but why not just restart it at four?
Because
why
it's until 3:28? It's a lot cooler at 2 minutes.
Does it have to be at the bottom of the hour? Are they trying to hit a live feed
I
from
think
all
so.
The news networks or something?
Yeah, and it's much cooler if you do it from 2 minutes. You know, it's just. It's just cooler because then you get all the check, systems check, stage 4 check, you know. It's all good. It's all good.
Gas cap, check.
Check.
Right, Roger, we do that?
Roger and Matt, the heck are they?
It'll be fine, I'm sure. Don't tell us. We'll be good.
Oh,
now, did you say this is from Canaveral?
I believe it's Cape Canaveral, yeah. Which used to be called Cape Kennedy, and before that was called Cape Canaveral.
It went back to Canaveral?
Yeah.
So
I don't know why.
So it was
but...
Wait, it did get called Cape Kennedy for
yes,
a while?
It was named after the president because he was
renamed
the one
after...
who started the program.
So after he was assassinated.
Right.
They
named it after him, and then many, many years later, they decided to just switch it back to Cape Canaveral. Its original name. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. The Kennedy Space Center, that sounds familiar, right?
That's still in existence.
Is that, where's
I'm
that?
I'm not sure if that's in Florida or if that's in Texas.
That's not at Cape Canaveral? Maybe it's sort of like...
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if it's in Florida or at Cape Canaveral
Cape
or
Canaveral's
if it's in
at
Texas.
The Kennedy Space Center? Something like that?
It could be. You want me to look it up?
No, don't go.
All right.
Somebody wrote, the sun is going down, you guys.
Hydrogen purge. Someone just watch. That's dinner from last night. Good luck. Don't forget the sunblock.
Somebody wrote, it is sexist to call the sun and not daughter.
Fuck that one. Somebody else says, I'm supposed to wake up in 2 hours. This is funny. Oh, my
God. Now, what's pretty sweet is if you're in Florida,
mm-hmm.
I would imagine from a lot of Florida, with it being dark out, you'd see this thing in the sky eventually, right? As it goes up.
What do you mean?
Well,
you'll see it going up from the launch.
I know at the launch spot you would, but I would imagine for much of Florida, being dark, you get out and look up 4 minutes after this thing launched, I would think you're seeing a streak go across the sky, right?
You might. I mean, I don't think from the whole state. I don't think if you're up in the panhandle and you look up, you're going to see this.
I wonder.
I don't know.
Somebody asked if this is the first Space Force launch.
No, it's not the Space Force.
I think they were being funny.
Actually, somebody just texted Space Force Yahoo.
Somebody just wrote, "Hello from the sun. Don't send your garbage here."
This is riveting radio. You know that.
Sydney, Australia checking in.
There you go. Is this man, you know what, read the, oh my gosh.
I love it. Is this man, yes. Lou Manfredini's on board, and they've got really good windows that you should find at your home.
Oh, man.
How long is it going to take to get there, Raj?
7 years, I believe.
7 years?
Yeah.
Going 450,000 miles an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Holy.
It's going in orbits.
Oh, it's not going in a straight line.
It's not going in a straight line. It's going in orbit.
Yeah, it's not a nonstop.
No.
They're going to
stop off in Venus.
Yeah. We got a quick stop by in Venus, and then we'll get you there. Sir, if you could just please hold on. We need to stop at Venus first. You should have looked when you checked the ticket.
Like I said, Parker uses a highly elliptical orbit with Venus gravity assist to get closer to the sun.
It's like the slingshot thing they always do in these things, right?
You remember Star Trek?
Something, phew, no,
right?
You don't
remember the movie?
I don't like Star Trek.
Oh, pfft. They use the sun to snap them at a high speed to force them back and then forward in time.
Okay, I don't think that's what NASA's doing here. Roger. If the spaceship could go back in time, they'll get there quicker.
I could just hear. But, Bones, we tried your way.
This is how we'd get fired from NASA, because you'd start quoting Star Trek stuff. Roger would have worn his Star Trek t-shirt to the launch tonight. They'd be like, oh, God.
I would have.
And they'd be like, no, it's just like, remember on that episode where they did it? And they'd be like, dude, this is real. Shut up.
No, are we going to slingshot around the sun and go back in time? Be there in 3 years instead of seven. It'll go much quicker, I'm telling you. I saw it in an episode.
Oh, man. And then you'd start quoting from it.
That was the one guest starring the one guy from Emergency. Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
Okay, well, we just can't sit and watch this all night, can we? Launch the darn thing.
Let's move to the sun.
We'll come back to it.
Okay.
We'll come back to it. Somebody just wrote, I can see the sun from Chicago.
Well, it's not.
So I'll see it. In 7 years, we'll see it getting close, right?
You'll see a little puff.
If I look up, can I see this thing if it's going to the sun?
Don't look directly at the sun.
I see the sun, and I don't see that probe anywhere. They're full of it. It's not up there. 7 years. I can see the thing. It's right there. That doesn't take 7 years to get to.
Oh, man. They're saying go, go, go.
I don't think they do it like that. They don't just come on, hey, hurry up. Launch it, go.
They're saying it. Turn it up.
Before we chicken out. Go.
Comments go up.
See?
Operation support.
We just did all this go
this
stuff
is,
like
no,
10
this is a new
ago.
Go. This is the getting ready to start the clock go.
What was the last one? All the concurs?
Yeah, they concurred that the electronics, the computer signals were working. That they fixed the old problem.
Go. Vehicle system engineer. Go. Anomaly chief. Go. Range coordinator.
Well, that was a forceful
you know what
go.
I would
did
say
you hear
if
that
I,
one guy? Go.
Yeah, you know what I would say if I go, if they came to me? Pokemon Go.
God, you wouldn't even get the pension. You'd be so fired. And then the worst part is that it cracks you up that much. You said Pokemon Go. Computers, go.
Launchpad,
go. Roger, Pokemon, go. Who asked Roger?
Why is he here?
28 a.m. this morning. Well, he still got the 4 minutes on the clock.
Okay.
Hey, Jess, here's your 314. Don't miss Chicago Tribune's first ever night market. You can enjoy food, fun, and entertainment. That's August 24th through the 26th. To learn more, visit ctfoodbowl.com/night market. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The text in line if you got something funny to say about our trip to the sun and whether or not it's going to take off. The Delta IV launch rocket that they've got ready to go there. They're launching. Hopefully in another 5 minutes or so, we'll get the two-minute countdown. We'll listen to it go up live in the air. If it gets delayed again, I quit. NASA's done, Raj. That's just so you know. We're going to try this again in a few minutes, and we'll see what happens. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Ground control to Major Tom.
KLC. Ground control. GH. Helium regulator. 5 seconds. Roger. Take your protein pills and put. Okay, team, we held it. T-minus. 1 minute, 55 seconds. 1 minute, 55 second
mark in the count. Eight. We have 9 minutes and 15 seconds remaining in tonight's window.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Lift off.
Now hold on, what happened? Because my clock stopped at 1:55.
Yeah, they're holding at 1:55.
Oh, come on! Just light it! You're killing me! I know they got to do it right, and I know they can't afford for it to screw up and blow up. Oh,
PLA evaluate locks, recycle, and report a fray to restart locks pumps.
They're going to miss this, Roger. They only have a few minutes left in the launch window.
No, they're going to do it.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
They said 9 minutes left in the launch window.
Are you holding your phone up here? Let me do this.
Evaluate locks.
The clock is back at 4 minutes.
Ready to restart locks pumps.
Roger. LC, it's a run. LC flight control, SFAP's inactive, STS in pre-flight mode.
Roger.
LC countdown. The clock has been reset to T-minus 4 minutes and holding.
Roger. OSM, place SRM ignition switch to disabled position.
Not happening.
They put it back in disabled
position. SRM is at disabled.
Not happening. Ain't going. I'm telling you, they said that 9 minutes
OBM
left.
OBM performed. They reset third the stage clock to four. Checklist.
Yeah.
That sucks. And
bummer.
All these workers in the middle of the night, they must be getting some overtime for that, right? I'm serious.
They sleep during the day.
That's got to be a time and a half situation.
I think so.
Copy that.
Weekend, overnight? No, I'm going to get double time for that, buddy.
I want my coffee break now. That's why they reset it to 4 minutes. Coffee break.
You know what happened is because everybody went, every time somebody said Roger,
LD on one.
You would go, yep.
LD with our scrub pad.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Excuse me, our hold past T-minus 2 minutes. You need to recycle back to L-minus 4 minutes. Window will not support that second attempt.
Uh-oh.
It's done. Let's set up for a 24-hour recycle.
Uh-oh. They've canceled the flight for tonight. They're looking for 24 hours from now, from what they just said. They will not make the window.
ALC on TC emergency panel. High-speed cameras normal.
EET or something. Ooh, Chicago checking in.
Oh, there you go.
Represent.
Melbourne, Australia just went by. Somebody wrote, it takes a good guy with a rocket to stop a bad guy with a rocket. If everybody had rockets. All right. Well,
this is great radio. Oh, someone just said Roger. What? I don't know.
Roger. So it's only 3:15 right now. So you said they said at 3:28 they're going to
move the clock to 2 minutes and then start the countdown.
And why? Why don't they just start the countdown?
Well, because they've been at 4 minutes for over a half an hour.
I know, but why not just restart it at 4?
Because
why are we
it's a lot
it,
cooler at 2 minutes.
Does it have to be at the bottom of the hour? Are they trying to hit a live feed
from all
the news networks or something?
Yeah. And it's much cooler if you do it from 2 minutes. You know, it's just, it's just cooler because then you get all the check, systems check, stage four check, you know. It's all good. It's all good.
Gas cap check.
Check.
Right, Roger, we do that?
Roger and Matt, the heck are they?
It'll be fine, I'm sure. Don't tell me. We'll be good. Oh, now, did you say this is from Canaveral?
I believe it's Cape Canaveral, yeah. Which used to be called Cape Kennedy, and before that was called Cape Canaveral.
It went back to Canaveral?
Yeah. So I don't know why, so it was
It did get called Cape Kennedy for a
while? It was named after the president because he was the one who started the program.
So after he was assassinated.
Right.
They
named it after him, and then many, many years later, they decided to just switch it back to Cape Canaveral. Its original name. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. The Kennedy Space Center, that sounds familiar, right?
That's still in existence.
Is that, where's that?
I'm not sure if that's in Florida or if that's in Texas.
That's not at Cape Canaveral? Maybe it's sort of like...
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if it's in Florida or at Cape Canaveral or if it's in Texas.
Cape Canaveral, is that the Kennedy Space Center? Something like that?
It could be. You want me to look it up?
No, don't go.
All right.
Somebody wrote, "The sun is going down, you guys."
Hydrogen purge. Someone just watch. That's dinner from last night. Good luck. Don't forget the sunblock.
Somebody wrote, "It is sexist to call the sun and not daughter."
Oh, somebody else says, "I'm supposed to wake up in 2 hours." This is funny. Oh my god!
Now, it's pretty sweet. If you're in Florida,
mm-hmm.
I would imagine from a lot of Florida, with it being dark out, you'd see this thing in the sky eventually, right? As it goes up.
What do you mean?
Well, if you'll see it
going up from the launch.
I know at the launch spot you would, but I would imagine for much of Florida, being dark, you get out and look up 4 minutes after this thing launched, I would think you're seeing a streak go across the sky, right?
You might. I mean, I don't think from the whole state. I don't think if you're up in the panhandle and you look up, you're going to see this.
I wonder.
I don't know.
Somebody asked if this is the first Space Force launch.
No, it's not the Space Force.
I think they were being funny.
Actually, somebody just texted Space Force Yahoo.
Somebody just wrote, "Hello from the sun. Don't send your garbage here."
This is riveting radio. You know that.
Sydney, Australia checking in.
There you go. Is this man? You know what? Read the... Oh, my gosh.
I love it. Is this man? Yes. Lou Manfredini's on board, and they've got really good windows that you should find at your home.
Oh, man.
How long is it going to take to get there, Raj?
7 years, I believe.
7 years?
Yeah.
Going 450,000 miles an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Holy...
It's going in orbits.
Oh, it's not going in a straight line.
It's not
line.
Going in a straight this line. It's going in orbit.
Yeah, it's not a nonstop.
No.
They're going to
stop off in Venus.
Yeah. We got a quick stop by in Venus, and then we'll get you there. Sir, if you could just please hold on. We need to stop at Venus first. You should have looked when you checked the ticket.
Like I said, Parker uses a highly elliptical orbit with Venus gravity assist to get closer to the sun.
It's like the slingshot thing they always do in these things, right?
You remember Star
Trek?
Around
something, phew, no,
right?
You don't remember
the movie?
I don't like Star Trek.
Oh, they use the sun to snap them at a high speed to force them back and then forward in time.
Okay, I don't think that's what NASA's doing here. Roger. If the spaceship could go back in time, they'll get there quicker.
I could just hear. But, Bones, we tried your way.
This is how we'd get fired from NASA, because you'd start quoting Star Trek stuff. Roger would have worn his Star Trek t-shirt to the launch tonight. They'd be like, oh, God.
I would have.
And they'd be like, no, it's just like, remember on that episode where they did it? And they'd be like, dude, this is real. Shut up.
No, are we going to slingshot around the sun and go back in time? Be there in 3 years instead of 7. It'll go much quicker, I'm telling you. I saw it in an episode.
Oh, man.
And then
man.
You'd start quoting from it. That was the one guest starring the one guy from Emergency.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
Okay, well, we just can't sit and watch this all night, can we? Launch the darn thing.
Let's move right, to the
so
sun.
We'll what? Come back to it. Okay. At three. We'll come back to it. Somebody just wrote, I can see the sun from Chicago. Well, it's not. So I'll see it. In 7 years, we'll see it getting close, right?
You'll see a little puff.
If I look up, can I see this thing if it's going to the sun?
Don't look directly at the sun.
I see
it's
the
not
sun,
good.
And I don't see that probe anywhere. They're full of it. It's not up there. 7 years. I can see the thing. It's right there. That doesn't take 7 years to get to.
Oh, man. Oh, they're saying go, go, go.
I don't think they do it like that. They don't just come on. Hey, 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 hurry up, hurry up. Launch it, launch it, launch it. Go.
They're saying it. Turn it up.
Before we chicken out. Go, 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 go.
Comments go up.
See?
No. Operation support.
We just did all this go
this
stuff
is,
like
no,
10
this is a new
ago.
Go. This is the getting ready to start the clock go.
What was the last one? All the concurs?
Yeah, they concurred that the electronics, the computer signals were working. That they fixed the old problem.
Go. Vehicle system engineer. Go. Anomaly chief. Go. Range coordinate.
Well, that was a forceful
you know what
go.
I would
did
say
you hear
if
that
I,
one guy? Go!
Yeah, you know what I would say if I go, if they came to me? Pokemon Go.
God, you wouldn't even get the pension. You'd be so fired. And then the worst part is that it cracks you up that much that you said Pokemon Go. Computers, go. Launchpad, go. Roger, Pokemon Go. Who asked Roger? Why is he here?
28 a.m. this morning.
Well, he's still got the 4 minutes on the clock.
Okay.
Hey, Jess, here's your 314. Don't miss Chicago Tribune's first ever night market. You can enjoy food, fun, and entertainment. That's August 24th through the 26th. To learn more, visit ctfoodbowl.com/night market. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The text in line if you got something funny to say about our trip to the sun. And whether or not it's going to take off the Delta IV launch rocket that they've got ready to go there. They're launching. Hopefully in another 5 minutes or so, we'll get the two-minute countdown. We'll listen to it go up live in the air. If it gets delayed again, I quit. NASA's done, Raj. That's just so you know. We're going to try this again in a few minutes, and we'll see what happens. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN.
Ground control to Major Tom.
Hey, LC. Ground control. GH. Helium regulator.
5 seconds.
Roger.
Take your protein pills and put.
Okay, team, we held it. T minus 1 minute, 55 seconds.
1 minute, 55 second mark in the count. Eight. We have 9 minutes and 15 seconds remaining in tonight's window.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Lift off.
Now hold on, what happened? Because my clock stopped at 1:55.
Yeah, they're holding at 1:55.
Oh, come on! Just light it! You're killing me! I know they got to do it right, and I know they can't afford for it to screw up and blow up. Oh,
come on. Evaluate LOX recycling report if ready to restart LOX pumps.
They're going to miss this, Roger. They only have a few
no,
minutes left in the launch window.
They're going to do it.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
They said 9 minutes left in the launch window.
Are you holding your phone up here? Let me do this.
Evaluate LOX.
The clock is back at 4 minutes.
Ready to restart LOX pumps.
Roger. LC, it's a run. LC flight control, SFAP's inactive, SCS in pre-flight mode.
Roger.
LC countdown. Clock has been reset to T-minus 4 minutes and holding.
Roger. OSM, place SRM ignition switch to disabled position.
Not well, happening.
They put it back in disabled
position. SRM is disabled.
Not happening. Ain't going. I'm telling you, they said that 9 minutes
OBM
left.
OBM performed
they reset
third
the
stage
clock
recycle
to four.
Checklist.
Yeah.
That sucks. And
bummer.
All these workers in the middle of the night, they must be getting some overtime for that, right? I'm serious.
They sleep during the day.
That's got to be a time and a half situation.
I think so.
Copy that.
Weekend, overnight? No, I'm going to get double time for that, buddy.
I want my coffee break now. That's why they reset it to 4 minutes. Coffee break.
You know what happened is because everybody went, every time somebody said Roger,
LD on one.
You would go, yep.
LD with our scrub pit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Our hold past T-minus 2 minutes. You need to recycle back to L-minus 4 minutes. Window will not support that second attempt.
Uh-oh.
I told you, it's done.
Correct,
it's
so
done.
Let's set up for a 24-hour recycle.
Uh-oh. They've canceled the flight for tonight. They're looking for 24 hours from now, from what they just said. They will not make the window.
ALC on TC emergency panel. High-speed cameras normal.
Normal.
Sounds like that's the only thing that's working is the high-speed cameras.
From Delta Launch Control.
Here we go.
As you've just heard on the live countdown net, we have expired our time in our window for tonight's launch.
Stations recycle systems back to T-minus 4 and holding.
So we'll begin to recycle and go for a 24-hour turnaround time for the launch of NASA's Parker Solar Probe. Mick and I, who are monitoring the countdown in the Launch Control Center,
will
continue to monitor and bring you more information as we know it.
Well, you know what this means. I get to do this all over again during Plyer's show.
I don't know if Plyer's going to have any of this.
I don't think he's going to.
Oh, man.
Darn it. I wanted to see the launch.
I know. We all did. It was exciting. And now it's not. Texter from 312 says, are you guys going to cover all 7 years of this?
We're not leaving from our chairs.
We will live broadcast the launch, and then we're podcasting the next 7 years.
There you go.
Minute by minute.
Yeah.
440 says, it just occurred to me that the sun is one place they did not look for Jimmy Hoffa. As long as the probe's going there, they might as well take a look around.
Yeah. Sounds logical to me.
Yes, absolutely. Logic is our middle name. All right. It is 3:30 in the morning. It's time for us to do the news headlines and then move on to other things because NASA didn't get it done tonight. Maybe they will tomorrow morning. Around this time. All right, Roger, go ahead. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. 720 WG, good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you. 312-981-7200. Larry Vance will join us in a little bit to talk about the MH370 crash from over 4 years ago. Where we still don't know what in the world happened. There is a show coming out. Roger, have you seen the preview? There's a show. I want to say it's going to be on ABC. I could have that wrong. But it looks like a weird sort of remake of Lost. There's a plane that disappeared.
Yeah.
Plane disappeared, never was found.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly cut to a plane landing at an airport. They're holding up the plane. The people are getting off the plane like, what's going on? And they're like, well, you took off 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And they're like, what?
Are you sure they did that?
Yes, I think that's the exact quote.
Okay.
And then, who knows? It's some supernatural, whatever, whatever, whatever. Maybe they're all dead. Maybe they're alive. I don't know. But these people were gone, missing. So it would be like as if this Malaysian Airlines plane suddenly landed where it was supposed to land.
Right.
Right now.
Yeah, 4 years.
And the people on it are like, no, we just took off 6 hours ago. This is
right.
This is when we're supposed to land.
A
no, it's 2018. What?
The Bermuda Triangle. How about that? Except they were nowhere near Bermuda.
No. Well, maybe they were.
There's
in the
another
end.
Triangle.
Maybe there is.
Maybe there's a hole in the solar system.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If suddenly that plane did land, would that be the craziest thing ever in our lifetimes? It would,
oh, yeah.
Would have to be by far,
oh,
right?
Sure.
By far.
Yeah.
Nothing would even come close.
No. Bermuda Triangle stuff, nothing's been documented. There's no science. It's all rumors. You know, like World War II fighter pilots suddenly appear in 1970.
Okay. What if they didn't land, but we find out that they did land 4 years ago on some island, and they've been trapped ever since? Or they really were hijacked, and they're in Kazakhstan. That'd be pretty crazy, too.
Yeah, it would. Sure. Anything like that.
Would be crazy.
I would like to see them just, like, the flight continuing at whatever height it was,
mm-hmm.
and the plane suddenly appears in the sky, like through a vortex.
Like they just went through a hole in the space-time continuum?
Yes. Yeah.
And they come back out the other end?
Somebody found the way. And there they are.
But that's not going to happen.
Well,
I mean,
we're sending a spaceship to the sun.
Well, we thought we were.
80, we will in 24 hours.
Yeah, says you.
Well, I'm sitting in the 85-degree back end of the spaceship. What do I know?
2,500 degrees outside.
On the front part.
85 on the back.
Yep.
After, what is it, 4 feet of carbon or 4 inches?
Oh, I switched off. There's several layers of it. Yeah.
A lot of it. I imagine, so that protects from the heat, but not
that's a heat shield.
But not necessarily the radiation. You probably can't send a human because radiation would be so bad that even
you'd
at 85 degrees.
You'd turn into the Hulk.
Well, somebody would volunteer for that.
The Hulk didn't volunteer.
That's true, he didn't.
Dr. Bruce Banner did not volunteer.
But he made the best with what he had.
Yes, he did.
So one benefit of being off for the last 3 weeks was...
Not dealing with me?
Yes. But I didn't enjoy a good Papanino's pizza. Thank you very much to you and Jess for getting pizza tonight. It was delicious.
Welcome.
I'd missed it.
It was all Raj.
We have had adventures with them since you've been gone.
But we do have a special... Roger and I do have a special surprise for you.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Now that you're back...
We can actually give it to him,
right? Yeah. Yeah. Boy, are we going to give it to you.
Oh, yeah.
And no heat shield involved.
You dorks. One of the things I was kind of nice about it is I sort of detached from the real world. Because I wasn't coming in on Friday nights, as soon as I knew, I would kind of quit following the news. Because I had baseball going on and got summer with the kids and everything else you're trying to do. And I pay more attention to the news because I know that we'll be here talking about things. So I need to be up on things. And so I saw a lot of headlines go by that I just didn't bother reading too much into. I was out of town last week and we had how many shootings? 72 shootings in 24 hours?
Yeah.
60 some?
Well, over the weekend.
Right. But that still was a hell of a
12,
lot.
12 killed over the weekend. Yeah.
So, you know, that and just whatever's going on in the White House. Omarosa's got a book out now. Omarosa is really interesting. Because I think people forget, we know her from Celebrity Apprentice with Donald Trump, but she was originally on Survivor, right? Wasn't that where she first became famous? I'm pretty sure it was.
I only remember her from Apprentice.
Oh, was she just on The Apprentice? She wasn't on Celebrity Apprentice? I forget that was a show.
Yeah, she was on Regular Celebrity. Apprentice. She was not a celebrity.
Oh,
no.
Okay. I wonder if she came back and was on Celebrity Apprentice, too.
She actually, well...
For some reason, I thought she was on Survivor.
She came back and sat on the other side of the table.
Did she get to be on the board?
Trump, yes.
Wow. So Omarosa, who was a villain when she was on the show regularly, was in the White House. She had, you know, a good position and everything. She was a big defender of President Trump.
She was an
Trump.
Advisor. She was one of his advisors.
And I think, I imagine it depends on who you talk to on what kind of a role she really had once they were in the White House. She ended up being escorted off the property. Kind of dramatic firing for Omarosa. And now she's got a book out. She supposedly did record some conversations with the president. And it's interesting. I read a tweet from Maggie Haberman from the New York Times where, you know, journalists are taking heat. You know, they're like, you know, Nobody in the mainstream media believed her when she was defending President Trump, but now that she wants to say bad things, now you're all quoting her. Why would you, you know, listen to her now? And they were like, well, she had a $180,000 a year job. She was in the White House. She was in the Oval Office. She was in meetings. She was an advisor. Why wouldn't we listen to what she says? Why did you put her there if you don't, if you're saying, oh, you can't trust her, she's this, this, or that? Well, you guys are the ones that gave her this huge job and this access to the President of the United States. But I do agree, though, with the conservative viewpoint of you can't trust anything she says. Why would you listen to her? Because the left definitely did discredit Omarosa the whole time. She's she's supporting the president, we're looking at her like, how can an African-American woman support this guy? With the things he says, the way he acts, we discounted everything. But now we want to listen to everything she says. So there is definitely a bit of a double-edged sword there on the left. To take everything she says now as, oh, look at how awful he is, look at what she says he did, is definitely a bit, you know, having our cake and eating it too.
Well, but if what she has written, if she what she is claiming, and so you have to put a caveat on that. If what she is claiming is true, you need to put that out there. If on the right, we're allowing people to make claims that turn out not to be true, but yet we're reporting that, then no matter what side or even in the middle, if people are making these claims, you have to report it because they are newsmakers in their positions or former positions. And then it's up to the media to investigate and to say whether it is true or not true. And I think there are reporters who have enough contacts and enough access to evidence where they can, and they have, presented factual representation of what the claims are, one way or the other. And so if you're allowing it to go, you're allowing one group of people to say things as is, then you need to allow other people to say things as is. And then,
well, I think that this president,
truth will
this
out.
This president gets fact-checked more than any other president probably ever has.
True.
And now he's earned that, you know,
right,
that distinction by what he says. And,
but
and
every president has been fact-checked.
Every president has been fact-checked. This president is, so most presidents are fact-checked like, this is my analogy here. Most presidents are fact-checked like a TSA pat-down going through screening. President Trump is fact-checked like he just got into Shawshank and they're stripping him down, they're watering him down, they're delousing him. That's the type of fact-checking he's going through. Now, that's it. So I believe the scrutiny is much more intense than it is for has been for other presidents. However, that's because this president is tweeting outlandish claims all the time and saying things that make people say, wait a minute, that can't be true. And so he has earned his extra fact-checking. But I do believe he's fact-checked like crazy. When you say, oh, people say things and we've got to report them because they're out there. Yeah, but...
Well, because
you know,
of
there's
status.
Debate, Roger, there's a debate, Roger. But her status was she was a celebrity... She was a reality show celebrity. I know you could say the same thing about the president, but she really was only famous because of the show. He at least was famous from writing his book and being a rich developer, and he's done a lot of big things. She was famous from a TV show, and then she parlayed that into this role within the Trump organization, and then she got fired and quite dismissed by the organization. I mean... Yeah, I understand. She was, you could say, look at her credentials. She's speaking about she was inside, she heard things. So there is something about that. But.
Or is she just being opportunistic?
Well,
and
I'm
trying
sure
to make money off of this.
Well, yes, of course she is, because that's what you would do. She already went back on a reality show. She was on Big Brother after she got fired.
Well,
right?
That's right. Yeah.
Forget so she's that. Definitely been opportunistic, as anybody would be. Once they got out of that role, you got to go make money. Sean Spicer is out there trying to make money and doing things. All these, anybody
who's
left
there. Yeah, he just wrote a new book.
They're either, I mean, let's face it. For most of the people that have left the administration, they're either under indictment or they're trying to figure out a way to probably profit from it in some way. Because why wouldn't you? If a book publisher is offering you money, you left that job, you need the work, you know, and you've got a story to tell. You were inside the craziest White House that has probably ever been. I'd be interested in hearing that story too. But it's interesting, like, how much credence do we put into every other story that comes out of there and how much should be put into it? With Omarosa, I think, you know, the right will dismiss her and the left will pay a lot more attention. And I'm sure there will be a lot of fact-checking. I've already seen Frank Luns, I think it was. And I don't know who that is. Is that a congressperson?
Say the name again.
Frank Luns?
That doesn't sound familiar.
L-U-N-Z? I just saw he wrote something about... Hold on one second. Let me see if I can find him. (312) 981-7200 is the number. Was it Luntz?
From what state? Do you remember?
Okay.
Senator, Congressman?
Frank Luntz, L-U-N-T-Z. Sounds like he's a focus group guy.
Focus group?
He tweeted, I'm in Omarosa's book on page 149. Mm-hmm. She claims to have heard from someone who heard from me that I heard Trump use the N-word. Not only is this flat out false, mm-hmm. I've never heard such a thing, but Omarosa didn't even make an effort to call or email me to verify. Very shoddy work. And he then tweeted, it seems like certain book publishers these days care more about getting a release out than getting the facts down. This is why people don't trust these exposés, which is especially bad for authors who are actually good and reliable.
Very interesting.
Yep. So, you know, now I don't know who Frank is, why he's mentioned in the book or anything like that, but...
It could have been a researcher.
I mean, the allegations are that during Apprentice, he was using the word, and people heard it. Allegedly, there are tapes of it.
Well, Tom Arnold, NBC has refused to release the tapes. Yeah. Any of the tapes.
Which is interesting. So, 312-981-7200. 3:50 in the morning here on 720 WGN. After 4 a.m., we'll talk a little bit about MH370, that missing airplane. The airplane that took off from Seattle-Tacoma Airport tonight is not missing. It did crash. There's video. There's a lot of audio of the guy, the gentleman, as I referred to him earlier, who is a ground worker. We believe a mechanic.
The airline has said he's not a mechanic. He helped direct planes that were landing, and he helped de-ice them, according to the reports. But he was not a plane mechanic.
So that's
ground
that
service.
That makes
officer.
It even more interesting yeah. that he had the knowledge to take off. And how do you?
Well, he's played video games.
I that's what he says. You know, if you listen to tapes, yeah, I kind of know what I'm doing up here. The whole idea of stealing an airplane is fascinating, though. They're just sitting there, right? They're sitting on the ground, and they have access. They're going in, cleaning them out. They're loading food on. They're cleaning out refilling the lavatories with everything or whatever, or, you know, emptying them out and refueling them. And if you just got in there and shut the door, is there no mechanism?
Safety mechanism to stop them?
You just pop the clutch, throw it in gear, and you just get going?
Yeah, I read a report. One of the reports had an eyewitness who was sitting in another plane on the runway, and this guy just taxied past him.
He's like, excuse me. He's like, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I'm stealing this, and I ain't waiting. I'm not 20th in line for taking off. Here's how this is going to work.
Yeah.
I stole this plane, so I'm going to the front of the line.
Yeah.
I'm not going to wait for everybody else.
And he just took
I don't know how long I got with this. I'm getting in the air.
Yeah.
So I wonder, did he follow the lines or he just cut across the grass in different spots?
It didn't say. The eyewitness said they just saw him taxiing past them, like cutting in line.
Hey!
Can you imagine if that happened on one of our expressways?
Well, imagine not only that. Not only does it happen.
Not with a plane, but.
Not only does it happen, yeah. but then say there's 20 planes in line and he cuts to the front.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who ain't taking off?
Yeah.
Those next 20 planes.
Yeah.
Because you know that the traffic controllers are going, wait a minute. Who is that? What is it? Where? Why is that guy? Where is he? Hello. Whoever that is in that plane that's cutting in front of everybody. Who are you? Identify yourself, please. And he's like, this is Joe and I'm taking off. And they're like, crap, 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 crap.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody else. You ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, they had to have stopped everything immediately.
Well, they did.
They figured that out, right?
They did. Because they didn't know what was going on initially when they saw the plane taking off.
Imagine the freak out that they were having until they, and I don't, maybe very quickly he got on the, you know, on the microphone and said, hey, this is Joe from the service crew. I'm taking this thing out for a ride. Don't worry. It's fine. We don't know. I mean,
yeah, we won't know until they release the tapes of that conversation.
Yeah.
Because again, the tapes, the audio that you played from a online thing called Broadcastify, where you can listen to the towers of every major airport around the world. You can listen to police.
How do they do that?
They just plug into the system. They
and
just plug right into
legal,
that frequency.
I guess?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. We used to do it with old police radios that we would get from, like, Radio Shack.
Mm-hmm.
And you could spend a ton of money on these because not all of them would get every available frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would have newsrooms back in the day where you'd have four or five radios just ticking on and off, blaring left and right, all different ones, state police, local police, fire, emergency vehicles, you name it. And well, that's what we would listen to.
And you guys still have some sort of scanner in the newsroom.
Not
you?
Anymore.
You don't.
We did at the old place.
You did at the tower.
Yeah. But now I can go on right now. You can go on. Go ahead. Go to Broadcastify. It'll ask you what you want to listen to. You pull up, ask for Chicago, and then you can pick from about 15 or 20 different broadcast frequencies of all the different police and fire. And there's in the Chicago, I think there's about 8 areas that broadcast. Then there's citywide. Then you have suburban fire, suburban emergency. There's a whole bunch of stuff, and you can listen. I've been doing this now for, I think I started listening to the airport towers about maybe 10 years ago. I was listening. It was boring, but I was listening to them.
Yeah, I imagine for the most part, there's nothing exciting on those, right? It's all
It's just
telling people where to go.
492, you're cleared to take off runway 49er. And then you sit there and wait for the next one. And, you know, it can be boring. So what happens is somebody who's monitoring Broadcastify or, you know, the SeaTac airport, they may not have been recording immediately, but they heard that there was something going on, and that's when they started to record.
Yeah.
And that's why we have that that audio.
There is, I think it's in Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers. I think. I'm not positive on this. But there's talk about why, it was kind of a section on why planes crash and what usually happens that causes a plane to crash.
Okay.
And he writes that it's usually a combination of three things, bad weather, newer crews who aren't used to working together. And I think there was at least one other thing that tend to all come together, or maybe a low visibility weather.
Mm-hmm.
No, I already said weather. Maybe just bad communication, something like that. And I think it's in this book. Maybe it's just in other stories I've read. But they're talking about how important, that they're all required to speak English. Around the world,
mm-hmm.
airlines are all required to speak English. And there were some, maybe it's not in this book, maybe it's just another thing I read, but there's some funny stories about pilots on the ground arguing with air traffic control because there was some person in Newark who was famous for yelling at the pilots about getting in line and doing things correctly.
Oh my
and so,
gosh.
You know, all the pilots are online and somebody took a wrong turn and this mm-hmm. woman like launches into a tirade against this guy and some other pilot comes on and says, "Are you my ex-wife?" Or something like that. But there was another one in Germany where the guy said something in German and the tower admonishes him and says, everything must be in English.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "I'm a German flying for a German airline in Germany. Why do I have to speak English?" And a British pilot got on the thing and said, "Because you lost the war."
No, this is in this book?
I don't remember if it's in the book or if I just read it, but I thought that was pretty funny. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk about MH370 coming up after the 4 a.m. news. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.
Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky like shooting stars? I could really use a wish right now, wish right now, wish right now.
Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number. It has been over 4 years since Malaysian Airlines plane MH370 disappeared, and the search has now been called off. We still don't truly know what happened, but there's an investigator who thinks he does know what happened. Larry Vance, according to a website where he can buy his book, has spent a lifetime in aviation. His background as a training pilot, flight test examiner, and civil aviation inspector led to a career as a professional accident investigator. He was investigator in charge for over 200 field investigations, including the Swissair 111 crash investigation, for which he received a Government of Canada certification of recognition. He continues to work on high-profile investigations worldwide. He has a book out called MH370, Mystery Solved. He joins us on the phone right now. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much for jumping on the phone. During the news, I was just watching the Australian 60 Minutes that you were on. It's fascinating because we've done tons of interviews over the years on this flight and this plane. And everybody that I've talked to up until now has pretty much concluded that they think there was a fire on board. They think there was a loss of pressurization. That's the only thing that seems to explain why this plane flew on and on for 6 hours till it ran out of fuel and landed in the sea. But you say that is not what happened.
No, sir, that is not what happened. And there's lots of proof to show that that's not what happened. And that's why I wrote the book, to put that all that physical evidence into the mix and to show people that the evidence is there.
All right, so let's talk about what physical evidence there is. There was some wreckage found a couple of years ago, right? Tell me about what wreckage was found, and are we 100% sure it is from that flight?
Yes, sir, we are, and that's confirmed by the official investigation. And airplane pieces like the ones that are found, or the important ones anyway, have serial numbers and so on, or identification numbers on them. So they trace them back to MH370. There's absolutely no doubt they came from that airplane. There's about 20 pieces that are from MH370 that are pretty much confirmed, and then there's another half a dozen or so small pieces that probably came from that airplane. But the two main ones that we have to deal with are from the flap system on the trailing edge of the right wing, and they came off during the ditching event when the airplane entered the water. One's called the flaperon. I'm sure some of your listeners will have heard of the flaperon. Sure. Came from the back of the wing. And there's a section of flap that was next to it that also broke off. And those two pieces floated, well, all the pieces floated to the coast of Africa, but those are the two main ones that were recovered. And there's physical evidence on those two pieces that tell us what happened. And I can explain that to you if you want me to go into some detail.
I absolutely do, because the other people dispute Martin Dolan, former head of the Australian Transport Safety Bureau, told the same 60 Minutes that there's not enough evidence. He said, quote, "The evidence is not yet sufficient to draw as firm a conclusion as you appear to have done." And he added that it was just speculation that the flaps were down.
Yeah, I spoke with Martin when we were down there taping that show. The 60 Minutes show, of course, was we had, 40 minutes of television time. We did a full day on that, 6 hours of taping, and they took certain parts of it to put on the television. But when we were taping that show, Mr. Dolan had not read my book. That was one of the drawbacks that we had for that. He was not aware of all the evidence that was in the book. He's since read it. I haven't talked to him since, but I think he might have been enlightened a little bit. But no, the physical evidence is there. And how you get physical evidence from two pieces like that is that you compare one to the other in the sections between them where they crashed together, where they were forced together during the impact. And you can take those physical marks, we call them witness marks, and you can line them up. And when you line them up, you discover that the flaps were extended. I should explain that the big revelation in all of this comes from the fact that the evidence that me and my team put together showed that the flaps were extended, and what that means is that a pilot had to have done that. The flaps cannot get extended on that airplane unless the pilot does it. And the pilot would do that at the end of the flight, which, of course, means that the pilot was controlling things at the end of the flight. And if the pilot was controlling things, then all of those suggestions by others that the pilot was somehow disabled and that the airplane was flying on its own on autopilot and ran out of fuel, that takes that all out of play. That didn't happen. The other big thing that we can tell from those pieces is that the airplane, in fact, entered the water at a low speed. It entered the water at a low speed with the wings level. In other words, it was set up for a controlled ditching event. The pilot put the flaps down, controlled the airplane down to the surface of the water, and then put it onto the surface of the water as delicately, if you will, as he possibly could in those circumstances, so as to make it land and stay in one piece. His intention was to have nothing come off the airplane. Nothing would float to the coast of Africa or anywhere else. So the airplane would disappear, never to be seen again. That was his intention. It took me 18 months to write a book to explain all this, but that is what the outcome is. That's it in a nutshell.
Well, Larry, but that's got to be pure speculation, though, right? That was his...
No.
Well, okay, so tell me how you know that was his intention to land the plane and have it disappear and parts not come off to be found.
Right, now you have to go back to the very beginning of the flight. You have to go back to the fact that he took off. He flew for about 30 minutes. He took the airplane up to cruising altitude. He said to air traffic control, those famous words, good night, Malaysian Air 370, or whatever he said. And then within 2 minutes of that time, the airplane disappeared from radar. The airplane completely disappeared from radar. That can only happen if there's a catastrophic event on board the airplane or the pilot turned the transponder off. We know there was no catastrophic event aboard the airplane because the airplane flew for another 6 or 7 hours and then was landed gently on the surface of the, or ditched on the surface of the ocean. So we know there was no catastrophic event. We know that he wasn't disabled. We know that he did it because he put the flaps down. Now, he intentionally made the airplane disappear by turning off the transponder, which is easy to do. You turn one switch, poof, off it goes. And now you make the airplane disappear from electronic radar tracking. And then he turned the airplane violently, aggressively, I guess you could say, back toward Malaysia and up and flew the airplane on a route that was between air traffic control sectors, between Vietnam and Malaysian airspace. He did that intentionally. That has to be done intentionally. Even the official investigation, which was just released, said that can only be done by somebody who was flying the airplane intentionally. It wasn't done by autopilot. It couldn't have been done. They figured it out aerodynamically. That it had to have been controlled by somebody doing it in the cockpit. The only person who can fly the airplane is the pilot. So now he flies for the better part of an hour on a route that took him up to a place where he avoided all the radars that were available that might have tracked him on what we call primary radar, the old military kind of radar they used back in the Second World War, where there's a signal sent out and it reflects off the airplane and comes back and it has a ghosty kind of a reflection. They don't see that on modern radars for air traffic control. They found that afterwards and were able to track that's what he did. And then he turned the airplane southbound and flew way down over the South China Sea or the Southern Indian Ocean. That's where he ditched it. So all of those things, and he also disabled other systems on the airplane. He disabled the what they call ACARS, which is an automatic connection between the airplane and some ground stations for exchanging information automatically. All those things were intentional acts. And when you put them all together, you say, this is the intention. Somebody intended to do that. They couldn't do that by accident, and it didn't happen because of some external force or some mechanical issue. It happened because somebody did it. Well, who could do it? The only person who could really do it would be the pilot. You know, the other speculation, of course, is that it could be somebody who hijacked the airplane, but there's good, reasonable analysis to say that that didn't happen either.
Okay, let's go back to, because you're very definitive on all of these things, and there could have been, so the theories early on and the books that were written earlier on, and maybe the answer is all of this information wasn't available to those people, I don't know, you have to tell me, but if there was a catastrophic event, if there was a fire, things like that, I've been told in the past that the way that plane is set up, where the communication systems are and things in front, that those things could get knocked out by a fire below the cockpit. Is that not a possibility?
Yeah, the fire could knock them out, that's for sure. But then what happens to the fire? Like that, people have said, well, the fire goes out. No, I've done accidents with fires. Fires don't go out. Fires continue to spread. Fires spread exponentially. And all the research that we did back when we did Swissair 111, that was on an airplane that went on fire and killed a lot of people. Airplanes crash well within 20 minutes of a fire breaking out on board. The other thing, of course, is if there was a fire which disabled the electronics and so on in the airplane, it would have also disabled all the feeds to the autopilot. The autopilot wouldn't have worked. The airplane couldn't have flown for 6 or 7 hours after a fire like that that knocked everything out. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. And not only the fact that you can't fly with a fire on board for that amount of time. The other thing, of course, the big thing is that how in the world would you fly with a fire that disabled the airplane and or disabled the autopilot or disabled the electronics and disabled the pilot, and then have the pilot do a ditching on the ocean with the flaps extended? That can't happen. Doesn't make any sense. When you say all this information wasn't available to others, I can tell you that it was available to the others. But I can tell you also that they didn't find it. The evidence was there. If you go into my book, you'll see photographs of definitive physical evidence, witness marks, that I have worked with for years and years and years. I've been doing this an awfully long time. And my partners, a couple of my partners, have been doing it even longer than me. It's very definitive and very easy to see. I get feedback from people all the time from all over the world, from people who have looked at this evidence and say, wow, this evidence has never been shown before except in this book. And that's the truth.
So
it's not magic. It's not something that you know, just appeared magically to me in a dream somewhere. This is not that hard to do. I have written that and said in the media before that I'm pretty disappointed that other people who are professional investigators didn't come up with this along with me. It surprises me.
Larry, let me ask you. So the evidence that really set you over on this is that the flaps being down on the pieces that were found. That to you said, that means a pilot was in control when this plane broke apart or when this plane crashed. That means a pilot did that. Or because if the flaps had been down earlier in this flight somehow, it wouldn't have flown on for as long as it did, correct? That would have been impossible.
Boy, that's an excellent summary by you. You just hit it spot on.
Okay.
No, if we didn't have these pieces that came to the shores of Africa, then I wouldn't be able to say any of this. I wouldn't just go speculating based on no evidence at all.
But so let me ask you then, is there in any way a possibility that those flaps are in that position because of the plane breaking up over the ocean? Is there any way that on a crash into the ocean, the flaps get knocked into a position that when they're found look like the flaps were placed down?
No, sir, that is absolutely not possible, physically not possible. No, it's not possible. You'll see, well, if you looked at the photographs and the depictions that I have in my book, you would see that the whole trailing edge of the right wing has compression forces along it that forced these pieces together, and it forced them together and left witness marks that could only be made if the flaps were in the down position. That's and It's very definitive. Like it's I said, it's not something that I just made up out of thin air. This is something that you look for on every single accident that you go to where there's wreckage. You go through the wreckage, you look for witness marks, and you reconstruct what was happening as the airplane was in its breakup sequence. And this particular airplane, it's easy to see that the flaps were dragged off the back of the wing. The flap pieces that broke off, the flap on and the piece of flap that broke off, were dragged from the back of the wing because they were fighting through the water. That great big huge airplane was dragging them through the water when they were extended down, and they put tremendous force on them. You can also see where the right wingtip had to have dug into the water to cause the compression along the trailing edge of that wing that put those pieces together. And if you take two pieces and crash them together and squish them together in compression, then you can see where they were when they made that compression. It's relatively easy to see. And the nice thing about this particular case is that the evidence that I show in my book will let ordinary citizens see exactly what I'm talking about. This is no great big mystery that takes somebody like myself and my partners to figure it out. But it doesn't take that amount of experience to understand it. Once you see it, it's all there for the seeing.
We're speaking with Larry Vance. His book is MH370, Mystery Solved. Let me ask you this then, because a lot of the theories were a decompression situation, right? That everybody was knocked out, and that, you know, one of the, and I can't remember, I've interviewed several authors who crash investigators, David Soucy and another woman whose name I can't remember because now it's been a few years because it's been so long since this thing disappeared. And some of the theories at the time were that because we've had other planes that have lost pressure and you get this kind of euphoric feeling, you think you can control the plane, then suddenly you don't really know what you're doing or all the passengers get knocked out. Is there any possibility in your mind that something like that did happen, and maybe because I know that one of the people I've talked to in the past cited another plane where an incident like that happened, but one person was able to get oxygen in time to stay awake, to stay alive, and got to the controls of the plane, but then they couldn't do anything. And is there any possibility then that did happen, that there was some event that caused a decompressurization and everybody was knocked out, but somebody, maybe because hours later the plane got low enough, or is there any way that somebody in the end was in control, that it wasn't a pilot and on purpose, but somebody, maybe the pilot woke up, maybe another person was able to stay alive and got to the front of the plane and put those flaps down to try to land the plane as softly as possible with what possibilities they had left, or is there no way that that's a possibility?
No, well, nobody else on the airplane except the pilot could fly the airplane. Nobody can just jump in the seat of a Boeing 777. First of all, they couldn't get in the cockpit, but second of all, even if they could, I mean, who could fly an airplane and put the flaps down and try and land it gently on the ocean? I mean, could you do it? I don't know many people who could do it except the pilot. As a matter of fact, it's not possible. No, what happened here was there was a decompression event. I can't prove that, but it fits with everything that's known from the evidence that we have, that the pilot, in fact, depressurized the airplane. That was part of the first event. Way back in the after the first half hour, when he turned the transponder off, it would make perfect sense from an evidence point of view that he would depressurize the airplane right at that time. Well, and of course, he has hours of oxygen available. He would put on his quick-don mask. He would say, okay, I'm fine. I'm going to depressurize the airplane. I'm going to eliminate everybody else on board. He would have already eliminated the other pilot by some method, which we can talk about if you want. But that would eliminate everybody else on board. Now he's on board the airplane by himself. It's the only one functioning. No, he just turns the pressurization back on and carries out the rest of his plan. This was well planned. This was a very well planned, well rehearsed event that took place. The pilot had an intention to do what he did, and he carried it out pretty much flawlessly. He kept the airplane from being discovered on radar. He took it down to the southern Indian Ocean. He made two mistakes. If you're looking at somebody who had the intention of making the airplane disappear, he made two mistakes. The first mistake was that he didn't realize that he couldn't turn off the connection between the engine and the satellite and the ground station, where the engine was sending information back as to its function, as it's programmed to do. That part of pilots don't know about those kind of things, and if he did know about it, he didn't know how to turn it off. So there was a connection that they were able to find. These are called these pings and so on between the airplane and the ground station. They were able to use those to track the airplane and show that it went to the southern Indian Ocean. That was mistake number one on his part. He didn't know that was going to happen. He thought that he took the airplane to some place where nobody would even know which part of the world it was in. The second thing that happened to him was, during this ditching event, which he had planned out, he took it to an area where it was coming daylight, so he had daylight, he could see the surface of the ocean, he could try and land it in a controlled ditching. Nobody would think that if you ditched an airplane out there and kept it basically in one piece, that any part or piece of that airplane would ever show up. What happened to him is that he, on the controlled ditching phase of it, the surface conditions must have been such, waves and swells and so on, that the right wing tip dug into the water and put enough force on the back of the wing to cause these pieces, that force plus the force of the water as the flaps were being dragged through the water, knocked off these pieces of this flaperon and this piece of the right outboard flap. It also forced the rear of the right wing into the fuselage and made a hole into the fuselage. We know that because we see some pieces from inside the fuselage, from inside the cabin where the people were. We see a few small pieces from there that migrated out through that hole. Nothing else came out through that hole, or very little would have come out through that hole, because that's where the water was rushing in. But if it hadn't have been for the fact that these pieces came off, then you and I wouldn't be talking. We wouldn't know that he had put the flaps down for an intentional ditching. And we see the condition of this flaperon and that flap piece was such that we know that the airplane entered the water at slow speed, because otherwise those pieces would not exist. People said right from the beginning that this airplane ran out of fuel and did a high-speed dive into the ocean. I guarantee you that flaperon that we see and that flap section that we see would not even exist if that happened. The whole airplane would have entered the water in something like one-third of a second, and they would have been blown to smithereens. I saw that in Swiss Air 111 years ago. We had 2 million pieces of that airplane. It entered the water at a high speed, something over 300 knots, and we had 2 million pieces of airplane. There was no such thing as a flap section or anything that even resembled that. It was just little pieces. And this one would have been the same. But this one was low speed, and the flaperon and the flap section were drug off backwards. They didn't impact the wing in front of them. They were just left behind in the water, and they floated to Africa, and thank God that they did, because we had them to look at, and we know from the evidence on them that the flaps were down. Therefore, we know that the flaps were put down intentionally. We know that the engine had been running. We know that the airplane had electrics, because you can't get the flaps down without electrics and hydraulics. And we know that this was done intentionally by the pilot. And to me, that's mystery solved.
Larry Vance is the author of MH370 Mystery Solved. Larry, I have to do the news. Can you hang on for a couple more minutes for a couple more questions?
Sure, I will.
All right, excellent.
Absolutely.
Larry Vance, an investigator who's investigated over 200 flights that have crashed over the years. He's been awarded honors in Canada for his work. He says it's solved. The pilot put it down. We'll talk a little bit more about that after we take a quick check for the news. 4:31 in the morning. Let's get our headlines, Roger. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Make Sundays your official night out to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN TV. We're speaking with Larry Vance. He is the author of MH370, Mystery Solved. And the book is out now. You can buy it on Amazon. And Larry's with us for just a couple of more minutes to answer a couple more questions. Larry, you were very definitive in the last half hour. This is your conclusion. You believe this to absolutely be true, that the pilot intentionally took this plane down. The whole, I guess, from where we get to point A to point B, what you know is the flaps were down, somebody was controlling it, you believe that the pilot intentionally did this. How he got rid of, or, you know, avoided any complications from the passengers on the plane or his co-pilot, and whether or not it was the pilot or co-pilot who did this, that you're a little less unsure of, correct?
That's correct, yeah. There's no definitive information to show which one did it, but one or the other of them did it. There's no reason to believe they did it together, so it had to be one or the other. Evidence points towards the captain, but I don't come to that conclusion in my book because there's nothing to show that definitively. Matt, I'd like to clear up just one little thing, we have a second. You said in the introduction I was the investigator in charge of Swiss Air 111 investigation. I was the deputy investigator in charge. I just want to make that clear so nobody can say that I said otherwise.
Sure, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You mentioned that the pilot or co-pilot, whoever was in control, could have depressurized the plane and then repressurized it when they wanted. Is that as simple as a flip of a switch for the pilot to control that?
Yeah, you can depressurize it. It's not one switch, but it can be done very easily. What you do is you shut the inflow of air off to the cabin, and then you open the outflow valves. It takes a few seconds, but no more than that. So that's a very easy thing to do. And then to get the airplane repressurized, you just go the other way. You turn close the outflow valves and turn the air back on and pressurize the airplane back up again. By then, everybody else would have been eliminated in the airplane. So that's no doubt how it was done. And, you know, people say, well, were the passengers still alive at the end of the flight? Well, after that amount of time, No, they were not. In my opinion, they were not. No.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
You know, you said that nobody else could have, you know, that there had to be the pilot that did this. Other people couldn't do it. You undoubtedly have heard the story now about what happened at Seattle-Tacoma Airport Friday night, that a ground worker basically stole an airplane, took off in it, did barrel rolls and crazy maneuvers, and then crashed the plane on purpose. And we don't know anything about this person as of yet. Maybe they had military experience. Maybe they flew planes in the past. And that hasn't gotten out there yet, but there's an instance of somebody just stealing an airplane. Do you think it's impossible, though, that it was anybody else except for the pilot in control of this plane?
In my opinion, it is, for MH370, that would be impossible. There was, first of all, they checked out, according to the official investigation, they checked out everybody else on the airplane. Nobody had any flying experience. I can see how the thing in Seattle could happen, to tell you the truth, but there's no way that there's any equivalency to what happened in MH370 to take that airplane and fly it to fly it intentionally on the route that airplane was flown, and then to fly it down to the southern Indian Ocean, and then to put the flaps down and land it where they did. No, that's a pilot doing that with absolute assurance. That was a pilot that did that.
So, Larry, I know you're just dealing in what you see as the facts, because there is this piece of plane, because the flap was down, that tells you somebody was in control, somebody did this on purpose, etc. But do you stop as you're coming up with your theory on this and say, but why in the world do you do all this and then fly it for that long and then try to land it on the ocean? Because that pilot then is going to die a horrific death. One thing to crash it at 500 miles an hour where it's going to be an instantaneous finish. But if he pulled off what you're saying he did, then that plane sunk in the ocean and he drowned to death, probably, if he survived the landing, which we're assuming he would have.
Yep, you're absolutely right about that. And see, that speaks to me. What that says is that this was all done intentionally to make the airplane disappear. Like, if somebody wanted to just commit suicide, if you will, then they could do it like the guy in Seattle apparently just did, and they could do it like the German Wings pilot did, just take it at 500 miles an hour and crash it straight down. That would not make the airplane disappear. That's why we can say with pretty high confidence that this guy wanted to the airplane to disappear. It surely looks like he wanted it to disappear so that nobody would know that he was a part of it, that it was his intention to do it. He wanted to be, obviously the guy knew he was going to be dead, He either had to do that because it was his intention to commit suicide, or he did it because he had some motivation other than pure suicide to make it happen. He wanted to make some kind of a statement, but he didn't want people to know that he was the one who did it. I don't have a background in criminal investigations and human factors kind of stuff that would say that I'm the guy to solve that part of it.
Sure.
What I know is that he did it. Why he did it? I think it's very important for experts to recognize and be solid in the fact that he did it, because you can't come up with a solid motivation for why he did it doesn't mean that he didn't do it. I mean, those two things don't fit together to me. And I have had many people say to me, well, there's no, and even the official investigation said this. They said, well, we can't find any reason why he would do that, so therefore he didn't do it. Well, I mean, does that make any sense to you? No.
Well, but in the official investigation, are they saying he didn't do it, or they're saying we can't say that he did it? We can't say anything.
No. What they're saying with the official investigation, the report was just released a couple weeks ago, and they're saying that it was done, that things were done intentionally, or things were done by a pilot. But it could, there could have been some involvement by a third party. It could have been some kind of a hijacking, or he was forced to do it, and this sort of thing. Well, again, it's hard to explain all the evidence that's in my book and in a few words of conversation. But the fact is that doesn't make any sense either. That there could be hijackers who could get into the cockpit and do what and force what happened to that airplane in something less than 2 minutes to get into the cockpit and make all this stuff happen and all the follow on events. It doesn't make any sense. It had to have been somebody already in the cockpit who already had control of the airplane, and that's really the only thing that makes that makes any sense and allows the evidence that we have to all come together to show us what happened. It all fits very nicely.
Larry, last question, because I've got to let you go here in a moment. I got to get caught up. But do you think, I know you feel that you've figured out this is exactly what happened. Are we ever going to find this plane? Will they ever have the black boxes? Will this ever be able to be truly confirmed by more evidence, by more of the plane? Where do you think this is headed?
Well, if nobody's looking for it, they're not going to find it. I don't know whether they'll have more searches come up. I suppose one day it will be found. I don't know whether I'll still be alive, but one day it'll be found. I know there's some people who want this search reopened because they think they know where the airplane is. I'm not sure. I would say that someday it'll be found, but it'll be a long time from now when they have better technology than they have today for looking for it.
If they do find it, say in the next year or two, is there any possibility they can still get information from those black boxes? Or now that they've been underwater that long, are those going to be ruined?
Oh no, they should be serviceable because they weren't beat up when the airplane entered the water. When they find it, it's going to confirm exactly, or if they find it, it will confirm exactly what I said in my book. I think that we're fortunate that we don't have to find the airplane in order to have confidence that we know what happened. I would like for you to read my book and after you do that, call me back and we can talk about the evidence as I've tried to describe in words. That would be a lot of fun. I'd like to do that.
That sounds good, Larry. We will do that. The book is MH370 Mystery Solved by Larry Vance. You can pick it up on Amazon. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
Real nice talking to you, sir.
You too, sir. All right, Larry Vance, we will check in with him again. We'll get a copy of the book, and we will look into it. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. Dorian Samuelson coming up with the morning show in just a few minutes. I didn't even get a chance to talk about North Korea. Just interesting articles about where we're at with the whole North Korea situation and what they are and aren't doing and how the administration is viewing it. And whether or not real progress is being made and how long real progress might actually take. Maybe it's defined in what is real progress and where is it headed. We'll talk more about that next week on the show. Orion coming up in just a few minutes here on 720 WGN. Well, thanks for hanging out with us this morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you. It's good to be back. I was off for a few weeks, but it was good to be back here for the last 4 hours with you. We'll be back next Saturday morning again at 1 a.m. Now, as we come upon 5 a.m., it's time to say good morning to Mr. Orion Samuelson. Hey, Big O.
And good morning to you, and welcome back. Where were you?
Well, my 13-now-year-old son Michael's all-star team that I was the manager of won sectionals, won state, and went down to the regionals in Indianapolis last week. And we were on our way. That's the age where they could end up in that Little League World Series in Williamsport. We fell short in regionals, but we had a great experience.
Well, and you learn a lot from losing. I can verify that because
that's for
you
sure. Find
out where your weaknesses are and you strengthen them.
Yeah, and you know, the good times aren't so good if you don't have the bad times to reflect upon, you know. I think
that's right, so you can compare.
Yeah, failure is very important in life, so we did good.
Well, yes. Good. Congratulations, and congratulations to your son.
Well, thank you very much, Arian. What's going on the big show today?
Well, let's see. I went to the Boone County Fair at Belvedere yesterday, had a great time with a lot of nice people out there. And today it's the Arlington Million, so we'll be at the Arlington Race Course watching the horses run.
Very cool.
On the show, Jim Fazell will be stopping by to visit with us. We're going to take a preview look at the Farm Progress Show this year in Boone, Iowa. Steve Alexander will talk to Matt Youngman, the man who puts the Farm Progress Show together. And we are going to talk livestock markets with Dennis Smith. So we have a busy morning.
Sounds like it. And any tips for the Million today, Orion? Anything you want to share?
No, I don't think so, because then when I don't win, everybody will be after my head for even suggesting it. So,
all right. Fair enough. We all lose our money on our own time.
Right.
Good deal. All right. Well, we'll be listening all the way home. You have a great show, sir.
You too. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. 5 in the morning, here's your news with Roger Battish.